Steve, thanks. Hi, it's us.
We're in the Stu studio.
I see what you did. That was brilliant.
I'm going home.
No,
Kevin,
on.
Don't go.
It's
the
a
show
sunny,
just started.
Beautiful day.
Oh, that's upsetting.
Puns are fun.
I'm looking at the schedule for today's show, and there's a lot of good things on today's show, but the thing I'm looking forward to the most is this. Kevin, our producer, is getting married in a few short months. You're still getting married, Kevin? Is that still on?
Still happening.
Still getting married.
Don't you hate when people say that, Kevin? You still getting married?
That's the first I've heard it, actually.
I originated it.
A, you
first
didn't.
First ever say that.
Hey, Kevin, you still getting married?
No,
that was awesome. That was funny, Steve.
Thank you.
You guys all steal each other's jokes. I'm telling you that right now.
I don't think that's true.
That's not true at all. We've got a wedding etiquette expert, a wedding etiquette coach coming on because there are so many things about the wedding, particularly Kevin's, that we don't know. Can I give you a quick for instance?
Certainly.
The wedding is coming up when, Kevin? In
September.
In September. Now, at some point...
Didn't you get the save the date thing?
Yeah, I
Didn't
got it.
Did you put it in your calendar?
No. I just have... It's on my refrigerator with a Freaky's magnet. At some point, I have to explain to Kevin that I cannot be his best man, and I feel awful about that, but I have to let him know that I can't do it. I'm going to attend the wedding, but I cannot be his best man, and I don't know how to delicately tell him that because it's going to crush him. So I'm going to talk to the wedding etiquette expert to say, when you've been asked a very nice honor to be somebody's best man,
yeah,
how do you gently say, I can't do it?
I'm looking forward to that.
Can I just say that's a great question for the wedding etiquette, but can I say another thing?
You can, sure.
He didn't ask you to be the best man.
He doesn't need to ask me.
Some things go without saying.
Some things, right, Steve? You know
right.
What I mean.
I mean, I agree with Kevin. You're about the best man I know, Bill.
Thank you for saying that.
Mm-hmm.
God, you guys, really.
What?
You don't think he is, Wendy?
That's hurtful.
Name a better man.
Who's better?
You, Bertrand.
Well, I'll name another one.
Kevin.
Okay,
he
three.
He can't be his own best man.
Oh, yeah.
How
okay.
would that look?
People would talk.
That would look selfish.
You talk about multitasking, and, you know, everybody's doing everybody else's job. Be your own best man. That's what you should follow their motto.
But you know how people have said the only guy that Trump could get as his vice presidential candidate would be Trump?
Yeah.
Well, you can't do that. If Kevin even suggested that, I think it would be... It'd be a mockery of the wedding system.
Somehow we just drew in my wedding to Donald Trump. We
right.
crossed a line somewhere.
Right.
Dude, it's 2016. Everything is Donald Trump.
We're not talking to this wedding expert till show number two today.
Right.
But I have to ask all of you a question. Have you ever turned anyone down who's asked you to stand up in a wedding?
I have twice turned people down, not to stand up in a wedding, but to perform the wedding. On two different
what,
occasions.
What, who does stand-up at a wedding?
Not do stand-up comedy. I've been asked twice to perform the ceremony.
Why would you?
To officiate.
Are you a minister?
No.
I don't. Am I in some weird world right now
no,
where
but,
Trump is going to be president and you've been asked to perform weddings?
You can get...
I am a minister of the Universal Life Church.
All right.
Can I just tell you, though, my dad signed all he signed himself up and all of his children, including myself. I was like 6 months old, and he sent the $5 thing. I have a card that says I'm a minister.
I watched you officiate a wedding at the Loop. Yeah, we had two listeners get married, and you officiated the wedding.
How come I don't remember any of my past?
Wow.
How are they doing, Wendy? Have you checked in on the couple from time to time?
You're supposed to.
Yeah, they've been married 60 years now.
I don't think that's true.
Why did they ask you?
Well, one was my niece and her husband, and they asked me because I think they were both drunk. And the other was a friend of mine from high school who was getting remarried and said it didn't really go well the first time. It was kind of a stiff ceremony. We'd like it to be more fun. Could you officiate? And if I'm marrying people,
yeah,
what does that say about anything?
I was going to say I'd never marry anyone, but evidently I did.
You did marry two listeners. You don't remember any
no.
of that at all? We did it on the show.
What's
you
is
don't
this
remember?
Early on? I'm not even joking. You bring up things very frequently
yeah.
that I have no memory, no recollection of.
This was a big day. This for them,
for them,
certainly. I guess not for you, but for them, that was one of the most important days of their life.
Wow. I hope they're still married. If you're listening, 312-981-7200. I'm sorry I don't remember you.
That's sad.
You were my only one.
Wink, wink.
Yeah, they're going to call now.
right.
But you never turned down anyone to be in the wedding party?
No.
I never have. There's no way to do it.
I've stood up to several, but I don't remember ever turning anyone down. That would be awful.
But I mean, it's funny because a lot of Kevin's friends were getting married before he is going to get married.
Right.
And it seemed like every weekend, Kevin, you were standing up in another wedding. And I'm like, how do you afford that? Because
it's not costly.
I know, because you have your tux, or if you're a girl, you have a dress that they say you'll wear again. Because I told my bridesmaids that you'll never wear it again.
No.
People like me, so I just, you know.
But it starts adding up. And Kevin, it seemed like every weekend you had a wedding.
Yeah, the past year and a half, 2 years have been pretty crazy.
You're at that age.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I still wear my wife's bridesmaid dresses.
You still do, Steve?
Yeah.
Sarah, okay, let me just throw this out there real quick. Sarah claims that she wants to dye her wedding dress after the wedding, so then she can wear it out and about, and I'm saying that is the worst idea I've ever heard in my life.
From what color to what color?
So it's a white, I assume, or off-white. I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
To, I don't know, she was saying like black or something, or dark.
Why wouldn't she? Well, I guess, you know, you can't wear a black one.
It depends what the wedding dress looks like. If it's all lacy and sequiny, unless you're going to Vegas, I don't know.
And what is she going to do in our bathtub? Like, how's that going to work?
No, you can have it.
Not tie-dye, just dye.
You can have it professionally done.
Yeah,
I don't like
Earl Scheib.
You buy the Rit, you go to the store, get the Rit dye, put it in your washer.
Right. It's easy. It'll look beautiful.
So I did Sharon's.
You did not in the washer, because then you got to run a few empty cycles to get the dye out. You do it in the wash tub. Oh, how you brought back memories of tie-dyeing shirts. How fun was that?
She remembers that.
It'll look like Jerry Garcia's wedding
dress. Yeah, let's not
do
that with the wedding dress.
Not the wedding, but yeah.
Right. All right, well, that's coming up later on. I'm telling you, I am giddy. This weather is outrageously wonderful.
Can't be better than this. Impossible.
No humidity, sunshine.
It's flawless. All right, we'll take a quick break and then more show. Wendy's giddy, for heaven's sakes. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. All right, it's us. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. And I know I've upset Kevin. I disclosed the fact that I will not be able to serve as his best man at his upcoming wedding in the fall. And I feel awful about it, Kevin.
Dodged a bullet, Kev.
Yeah, I'm beside myself right now.
There's two Kevins. He's beside himself.
Oh.
So,
so he can be his own best man, then.
Yeah, I guess you can be. You qualify now. Congratulations. I've told you this before. My wife and I have this thing going when we go to people's weddings where a lot of times they'll put us at that table, that odds and ends table of people that don't quite, you know, we weren't friends with Kevin in school or his wife.
Oh, right.
I'll
be sitting with
you,
you know, I bet.
Oh, I bet you will be.
So at least you'll know somebody.
Fun. Yeah. All right. That'll be fun then.
I'll be on my best behavior. Don't worry. I won't swear.
For the wedding? You will swear.
Probably. Not during the ceremony.
You'll have swear words printed on the rice that you'll throw at the church.
Already working on that. It's tough to paint them on those little rice pieces.
I know. It takes some doing. And you mentioned somebody texted in and asked if I could perform their wedding ceremony.
Okay, I'll be the third. Bill, will you marry my fiance and I October 1st in Evanston?
No.
Okay.
I cannot do that.
I don't think that's a nice way to say no.
I appreciate the offer.
That's better.
I do appreciate the offer. But I think if your wedding starts out with me declaring you married...
Doesn't count.
It starts on a bad note, doesn't it? It really does. And you know what's weird is, as non-religious as I am, and I'm extremely non-religious, for some reason in my head, I do believe it needs to be somebody either of religious
of the cloth?
Or not, well, either religious or, you know, somehow. Yeah.
We're having a friend do it for us.
That won't count as a real wedding, Kevin.
He's jealous you didn't ask him. I
would have said no.
I couldn't ask either of you with the swear words and then Bill being my best man.
I now
you know?
Pronounce you man
you
and wife.
You would swear then.
I would.
You
I
would
can't,
swear.
I can't effing believe it. They're married. Holy crap.
Right. Mommy, that officiator says a lot of swear words.
I like her. That's what they'd say.
They'd have to sell earmuffs outside of
all
that
right,
church.
Whatever. Your point being, what were you starting to say?
I don't know. It just seems like it's not if it's not being done by somebody who's either appointed by the court or by the church, which I can't believe I'm saying because I'm not religious. Why does it?
Because marriage is that it's the sanctity of marriage. You're trying to keep it
real.
As yeah,
we say
I hate
on the
to
streets.
Say it.
That's what we say on the streets.
But I do understand that because when I got Jimmy Mack bought me an anniversary ring for our 10-year anniversary. So he said, I feel funny you wearing that because that wasn't blessed by Father Hal Stanger.
No.
The other two rings were. And I
Father
said,
Hal Stanger.
Do you know him?
I do, yeah.
Everybody knows him. We could call him up and he could bless this ring.
He could.
It doesn't really matter.
Yeah. When Terry and I got married, we had a justice of the peace do our ceremony. And Terry's father was deeply religious. And in his eyes, it only counted if a priest was going to do it. So we told him before the wedding and even the day of the wedding that it was going to be a priest. And then we did this whole fake thing the day of the wedding where we kept saying, I don't know where he is. He was supposed to be here at 9 o'clock.
You started your wedding ceremony with a lie to your father-in-law?
Yeah. Because he it would have upset him so much. Wow. I mean, the way it played out was actually beautiful because Terry's a trained actress.
You're pretty good yourself.
I have a TV in the house, so I've seen some acting. I've watched a bunch of TV, so... All through the thing, we did this thing with my best man and her maid of honor where they'd come running over and they'd go, he called. He's just running really late. Traffic is awful. He's trying his best to get here. Like, we had everybody in on it except, of course, her dad.
When did he find out?
He never. And
he's passed away, so he's...
No longer with us. So he in what, his
what's
mind...
What's that? A thunder and lightning I hear right now?
A clap of
Move
thunder.
Away from me.
Yeah, he believed to his last day that we were trying because he, you know, it upset him so, it would have upset him so much if he'd thought we did what we actually did and that not have a priest do the ceremony. And it wasn't in a church either, it was outside, and that was already strike one. So,
why couldn't you have done something after the fact, like get his priest to just bless you or something? Wouldn't that have just made him feel better?
Yeah, probably.
But not you.
You know what? In all honesty, I think if he would have suggested that at some point, I would have been
like
okay
after
with that.
The fact.
Right.
Let's just, you know, do it. You know, sorry he didn't show up. I can't believe you started your wedding ceremony with a ruse.
I was going to say you said a lie the first time. I don't look at it as a lie, but it was a ruse when you stop.
That was a lie too.
When you stop and think about it, yeah, yeah.
Well, good job, you guys. You pulled it off.
And that was 20. It's 25 years ago. At the end of this month.
Congrats.
Thank you. It really. You know, when you were a kid and you saw people that were married for 25 years and you'd say to yourself, wow, that's quite a milestone.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, ours is 4 weeks away.
It's your silver anniversary.
Yeah. I was going to say, it's the silver one. That's a big deal.
That is a big deal.
What should we get him? A silver Sharpie?
That would be great. Would you do that for me? That would be
We can sign your card with a silver Sharpie. And,
all right.
And we'd have to get him a card, too.
Yep.
And we'll give him a sack of Jawias, and that's still silver?
I think the silver dollar? Yeah, I think it is.
No, I think those are gold.
Oh, that's
We'll
for
save
50.
That for your 50.
All right. Well, that's coming. All right. We'll take a break. Steve has the news, and then we have a big show for you, so stay where you are. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Steve, thanks very much. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. If you want to jump in, if you want to comment on something or ask a question, 312-981-7200, we'll get that done.
We were going to talk about this gorilla situation again.
Yeah, they released the 911 call that the mother made from the Cincinnati Zoo. If you haven't heard this, it is disturbing, no doubt about it. What you're getting here is the mom, after her son had climbed into the enclosure.
Fallen in.
Well...
He climbed...
Falling almost implies it was accidental. He set out to get in that enclosure, and he pulled it off.
He had to climb through a planter and some bushes. There was a 3-foot-high fence. When you think about it, 3 feet is not that high, but it's kind of implying, don't go past this.
Right, right.
And he scaled the 3-foot fence and fell, from my understanding, 15 feet into the enclosure.
Yeah, yeah.
But... That was the quick way down. It seems like he was determined to get in there.
Oh, yeah. Without a doubt, he was. So here's the call. We'll play it. And by the way, as a quick side note to this, his family, this child's family, has announced that they will not be suing the zoo, which is interesting because I'm not sure they had legal grounds to sue the zoo.
Well, sure.
Oh, sure. I would think they would.
Absolutely. You know, we talked about this off the air, and this is where I'm confused about everything. If I trip in front of the Tribune Tower on a sidewalk,
yeah,
it's because I'm clumsy. It's not unless there was some big divot in the sidewalk or something.
Right.
But upon further inspection, you have homeowners insurance to cover something like that if something should happen.
Right.
So the zoo has liability insurance. The boy, you know, I don't know what his injuries were, but it's certainly traumatic and is going to stay with him for quite some time. They have every right to sue.
Even though the kid, it was kind of on the kid. The kid said, I want to climb in there. I want to get in there with that gorilla. And then he did. I mean, I guess the zoo, I guess it's the zoo's responsibility to make it as close to impossible as you can possibly make it for that to happen.
But there's, oh, you know, they say when you park your car at a garage, they're not responsible for something that happens. At Great America, they're not responsible if you get hurt. But yeah, you can still
sue. You are still,
yeah.
Right. If anyone needed a lawyer in this, it's the gorilla.
I am so with you. I'm just, you know, I thought about Harenge last night, and I just thought, God, that gorilla's dead because of that little impish kid.
The gorilla is just doing
what a gorilla does.
What he would do. And sad, I mean, he's in a zoo. No, I don't think he volunteered. He didn't sign up to be in a zoo, but he's in a zoo. And then all of a sudden, a kid pops in, again, through no fault of the gorillas.
Right.
And
he's dead.
And then you go, now they're shooting at me. And I didn't do anything. I'm in my gorilla enclosure. I didn't ask for any of this.
He didn't. And the people who raised this gorilla said that he has always been docile and gentle and wouldn't have hurt the kid. But you can't stand by and wait to see.
Right.
You can't. You
right.
have to take action. It was a split-second decision on the zoo's part.
Right.
And they're heartbroken that their lowland gorilla is no longer there.
Right.
So,
through no fault of his own.
I know. It's a lose-lose situation, but it's nice that they're not suing.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, they could. They really could.
Couldn't the zoo then, and this would be terrible PR for the zoo, couldn't they sue the family saying, hey, because of your child, we're down a gorilla?
I don't think so.
They couldn't.
We should get Rich Lankoff on this. Seriously.
Yeah.
Because this kid fell 15 feet, and you know it sucks because I know Brookfield Zoo has Tropic World, and you try and make it as realistic as possible, or you go back to the old days when there's just plexiglass windows.
I mean,
right? You know,
right?
And then Dr. John Duffy was on with us, a clinical psychologist, and he said, how many times has your kid slipped away from you at a store, and the panic sets in because they're lost for a minute? You lose track of them.
Yep.
It happens.
Right. And in this one, it could have been fatal. It certainly
Absolutely.
Was for the gorilla.
And this kid could have died from that 15-foot fall.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a long fall. All right. Let's play a little bit of the audio. We've already got people that are checking in at 312-981-7200. Here's the 911 call from the mom at the Cincinnati Zoo the other day.
My son fell in the zoo exhibit at the gorilla. It's a setting zoo. My son fell in with a gorilla. Okay. There's a male gorilla standing over him. I need someone to contact the zoo, please.
Okay. We do already have him started. We do already have him help started there, okay?
Be calm. Be calm. Be calm.
How old
Be calm.
Is
Who's dragging my son? I can't watch this.
How old
is your
son?
I can't watch.
All right. A couple quick elements. Number one, she keeps yelling, be calm, and that's to the boy,
yeah.
Obviously. She also says, I can't watch this, which I get.
Oh, my God. At that point, I mean, she probably thought that gorilla is going to rip that kid apart.
Right. Right. Here's something I thought about the other day when I hadn't heard the 911 call. And now I think about it more when I hear the 911 call. If you were the parent or guardian of this child, would you be inclined to jump in after the kid and try to make a rescue?
No.
You wouldn't. Because that's the... I thought about that immediately the other day. If I had taken one of my daughters to the zoo, and then I look over and my daughter's in with the gorillas and they're all trying to figure out what the best course of action is, my course of action would be to run in there and either distract or get her away from the gorilla. I would do that immediately.
I would never do that.
You wouldn't?
No. Because here's an adult now. Now, you know, this gorilla's seeing two different things. If anything, I think it's going to make him more irritated and angry.
Yeah.
And if he was protecting the boy, which it did kind of appear he was doing at first.
But wouldn't you feel, let's say the worst case scenario is the gorilla killed that kid. Wouldn't you as the parent, when looking back on that tragic day, go, and I didn't even try to get in there to get her out of there, him or her out of there.
But it's also, you know, it's a 4-year-old kid who looks much older to me, if you want my opinion.
Yeah.
He really looks older. I'm not saying they're lying, but he's a big 4-year-old. I mean, look at when people have gone to various amusement parks. I'll bring that back up. And they have stood up or done something against the rules,
right.
And their head gets hit and they die.
Right.
I mean, that's a terrible accident.
Oh, sure.
Well, this is kind of an accident, too.
Oh, it is. It definitely
is. I mean,
is.
Even though the kid said, I want to go swimming in that water, I'm sorry, every kid has said that, and I would say 99.9% of them don't follow through with it.
All but one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right, right, right. All right, we've got a bunch of calls. We're at 312-981-7200. Let's take them now.
All right, Casey, talk to us.
Hi, Wendy and Bill. I have to disagree with you or something. I don't feel that the parents should be able to sue the zoo. I mean, you said if you were walking down the street in front of Tribune Tower and tripped, you know, you can't sue them because it's your own clumsy. Well, they have barricades around there. Are you going to go around the barricades to trip and then hold the Tribune Tower responsible?
No, but think about all the barricades. But now listen to this, Casey, because this is where it comes to. We've never had a pool in our life, but we've known people who have a pool, and the requirement is to have a fence around your yard, and it needs to be 6 feet high, I think.
Yeah.
Do you know how many times I've climbed a 6-foot fence and gone skinny dipping in other people's pools? Probably once. But I mean, if something happened to me there in their pool, we would have every right to sue them, even though I trespassed and got in there.
I know you do. I still don't feel that's right, because you broke basically the law by trespassing on somebody else's property that says, do not here. Here's a fence around you. You can't come in here, but you went in there anyway. I don't see how that gives you the right to sue them, because you're careless and neglectful and uncaring of their property.
And I wouldn't sue them, but it's, I think, on the books. We really should see if Rich Lankoff is available, because, again, even though you put the safety security around the zoo exhibit, but see, here's what I don't know what he's suing, what they're suing for, because the kid wasn't injured, was he?
That I don't know.
But a psychological distress, how do you put a price tag on that? I don't know how that goes. I'm not a lawyer.
Well, they're suing, saying our child's life was in danger because you didn't take the proper precautions to make that a safe environment. But the zoo could then say,
we've
had this thing up for years and years and years, and your kid is the only one that slipped through. As far as we were concerned, we did everything in our power, you know, to make this a safe thing. Your kid bypass that. He slipped through it.
They made attempts to keep it safe, but sure. I just feel like you have the right. I certainly wouldn't, because I would feel terrible I feel sorry for this mother, you guys, because she is really getting a bum rap. What could she have done unless she had her kid on a leash? Which I've seen, and I'll tell you this, I saw some home videos of Jimmy Mack, and they were in Hawaii, and Mrs. McInerney, Annette, had Jim.
Had him on a leash?
On a leash, because she was scared he was gonna run into the ocean and drown. And then I brought this up to Jim yesterday, and he said, let me rephrase that. Maybe I had her on a leash.
Oh, maybe.
But that's not how it was. And I've seen people, I worked at Brookfield Zoo for many, many years, and I saw parents with kids on a leash, and I thought, oh my God, look at that.
It's terrible.
It is terrible. But I mean, how else are you going to guarantee that kid is not going to slip away from you?
Right.
I'm not saying it's right.
You know where they are.
Yeah, but it also looks like, you know, oh, I'm taking my pet son for a walk today. We're going to the zoo.
And if he's good, I'll give him a milk bone. We'll see how he behaves.
All right. Well, Casey, we're going to look into this, because I agree with you. I think that they have no right to sue, but they certainly do, because her kid fell in the enclosure. But I'm not a lawyer.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. I'm with you, Wendy. Thanks for your time.
Casey, thank you. All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break and then more of your thoughts on this. We just played you the 911 tape from the mom at the Cincinnati Zoo. What are your thoughts? We're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder. We just played for you the tape of the mom who brought her young son to the Cincinnati Zoo. His son then climbed in the gorilla enclosure. You know the story. We just played you the 911 tape.
Can we hear
tape.
It again?
Yeah, sure.
My son fell in the zoo exhibit at the gorilla. The Cincinnati Zoo. My son fell in with the gorilla. Okay. There's a male gorilla standing over him. I need someone to contact the zoo, please.
Okay. We do already have him started. We do already have a help started there, okay?
Be calm. Who's dragging my son? I can't watch this. I can't watch.
Oh, my God, to be that mom. I really can't imagine it.
Awful. Am I the only... By the way, we do have Rich Lankoff to talk about the legal ramifications of this. Impulsively, I said to you, and I mean this, if it were one of my daughters who had done this, I would have dove in within seconds. I would have jumped into the cage. But now, like, I think I might be the only one who feels that way.
Well, she had other children with her, too. So, I mean, what, do you leave your other kids to go do that?
It's yes. A w- I would have.
It's a split second. You know what? You probably would have. I know you, and you're very gallant.
I would have done it if it was somebody else's kid, even.
Well, then you're stupid, because what if something happened to you? Terry would kill you if you didn't kill yourself.
Bill, I know what you're saying. I would think I would, too, but it also would have been the wrong decision in this case, I think.
If you were on a boat with your kid and your kid fell in the ocean, wouldn't you, like, before looking around and going, there's
totally
lifesavers.
Totally different situation.
What they're saying is one of the issues here was that the gorilla might have been perturbed into action.
Yeah.
So, I mean, even though I think our reaction would have been to do it, to try to help,
yeah.
It probably would not have helped the situation is what I'm saying.
And the kid could be dead right now if that happened. Both of you could be dead.
Right. And once I'm in there, I don't know if I'm trying to distract him with keys, you know, doing something like that so the kid can crawl away.
God, I wish you were there that day, because I would want the video of you. Here, Mr. Gorilla. Dingle, dingle, dingle. Or jingle. I don't know why I said
jingle. I would hum the Magilla Gorilla song and say, come on, you know the words. Sing with me. Come on, do something.
Rich Lankoff is on the line with us, half of Legal Face Off, which you can find on WGNplus.com. And Rich, what came up is the family has decided not to sue the Cincinnati Zoo because of what happened. And we kind of were questioning what right did they have to sue. But didn't they have a right? Even though barricades were up there, this kid still fell in an enclosure?
Well, first of all, I think I'm more than half of Legal Face Off. To be fair, I think I'm at least like 2/3.
Sure. Easily.
We'll leave that alone. Thanks for having me, guys. Yeah, I mean, great question.
We could always call your partner instead of you, Rich. I'm totally kidding. You lucked out with us.
There's definitely liability for the zoo. I mean, the fact that they have currently decided not to pursue litigation is not surprising given the reaction that they've received, the backlash they've received online. But remember, they've got a lot of time to change their mind and file suit. And I would not be surprised if they did so. Generally, the statute of limitations for these kind of injuries are 2 years. So they got plenty of time. To answer your question about, you know, what the liability for the zoo is, there is liability. I mean, they did have a 3-foot fence. We've all seen the pictures. They had some brush after the fence. And then there was the, you know, 15-foot drop. The question of whether that is sufficient to, you know, prevent patrons from falling in, it really depends on a couple things. I mean, one key question that a jury would look at is what the foreseeability of this kind of injury is. In other words, did anyone else in that zoo or in zoos general, has that kind of thing ever happened before? If they had a similar incident, which, you know, we know they didn't, but let's say they did have a similar incident a year before, a jury is far more likely to find them negligent than if this was the first time that happened. So, you know, I think there's liability for the zoo in this case. And the fact that it seems like from the eyewitness accounts that it was pretty easy for this kid to get through the fence, you know, there's definitely liability there. And I think there's at least enough to get to a jury. I mean, the way we look at these cases is not whether you can sue, because as we've talked about on your show many times, anyone could sue anyone for anything. The question is whether that case will get to a jury, whether it will survive a motion for summary judgment. In this case, I think it would.
Couldn't the zoo in some way, Rich, say, well, if you're going to sue us, we have this gorilla that is no longer with us because of your child. I know that's PR, the bad PR for the zoo, but they could do that, couldn't they?
They could. And they could also argue that they could, you know, argue that the parents are more liable for letting the kid get into the enclosure. That argument wouldn't really hold a lot of weight. I mean, that's something they would definitely argue, and it's a natural argument. But the problem with that, again, with regard to foreseeability, is that the zoo is on notice, obviously, that people are coming to the zoo, that kids are coming to the zoo, and that kids, you know, tend to do things like this, not necessarily jump in a gorilla pit, but, you know, they're on notice, they're inviting patrons in to use their facilities. So you can't argue that as the zoo, you can't say, well, it's all the parents' fault, because, you know, you're on notice, you have a duty as a zoo, as a retail store, as a restaurant, that people might do things like this, and you have to take precautions to guard against it.
And you said, you know, the mother might be held could be held accountable for letting the kid in. She did not let the kid in. She lost track of that kid, which I keep thinking about. I lost one of my sons at Kohl's one time and freaked out. You take your eye away for a minute.
But not in the gorilla department at Kohl's. That's a different story. Wouldn't you be on high alert if you knew that there were gorillas that could untwist your kid's
head?
No,
because you're not in the gorilla exhibit. You're assuming that, you know, it's going to be next to impossible for your kid to get in the enclosure.
Yeah.
I mean, I would keep a closer eye on them. And, you know, I got one kid who's 17 and one who's almost 14, so they've lived this long.
Right. But if the mom says that, if the mom says those words, I thought it was impossible for my child to get in the enclosure, then the zoo goes, exactly, that's what we thought too.
Yeah, I mean, I think, listen, I...
Well, then nobody's mad at anybody and nobody sues anybody.
That would be
That'd be the perfect world.
Right, right.
Yeah, well, you know, as a defense attorney, I see these kind of, I defend against these kind of lawsuits all the time. And, you know, to your point, what we often argue, what we usually argue, and you know, with a lot of success, and it's common sense, is that you have a responsibility as a patron of a zoo, as a parent, as a human being walking around this earth to pay attention. And it's not, you know, just because you go to a zoo doesn't mean that they're the guarantors of your safety, that they're the insurers of your safety. They're there to provide a product and obviously to provide a safe environment. But, you know, the zoo can't foresee every single, you know, possibility. And obviously it's the parents' responsibility to watch out for their kid's safety. I'm not saying this woman didn't do it, but by the accounts we've heard, you know, this kid didn't just jump in. He was talking about doing it for a few minutes or seconds.
Premeditated.
Rich, if one of your kids said, if you're at, you know, Old Orchard and the kid says, I want to go walk in that fountain, you go, you're not going to walk in that fountain. That's probably a bad example because the kid's probably still going to do it anyway. But if your kid said, I'm going to go swim with the gorilla, wouldn't you go, you're not doing that? And you wouldn't even believe that they would do that.
Well, I mean, I would, you know, listen, I have two small kids. We go to the zoo all the time. I was at the Lincoln Park Zoo over the weekend. I, like most parents, like you guys, I keep pretty close watch on my kids when they're out in the world. I wouldn't assume that, you know, my kid would jump into a gorilla pit, but I don't let my kids
out of your sight.
I don't let them too far away from me.
And, you know, I tried not to, too, and now I'm thinking another time Michael got lost. We went to the Children's Museum, couldn't find him anywhere. I said to my sister, where is he? I don't know. I thought he was with you.
Oh, great.
And he was upstairs at the train table just laying down and playing with the trains. And I'm sorry. Sometimes your kid slips away from you.
It happens, for sure. Listen, we've all been there. We've not all necessarily been to the point where your kid is with a 400-pound gorilla. But
true.
You know,
thank God.
But in terms of legal liability, I definitely think the zoo has some. I wouldn't be surprised if these parents, if the family changed their mind at some point.
Hmm.
And sue. I mean, you can imagine the amount of personal injury lawyers that are probably, you know,
sure,
calling them. There's also, you know, there's also criminal liability for the parents. I think the authorities have announced that they're not going to pursue it, but there's definitely the potential of criminal liability on behalf of the parents for, you know, allowing this to happen.
Yep.
or not being, you know, not watching their kid closely enough.
Rich Lankoff, thanks for being with us and for using the word guarantors. That was a highlight.
Thank you.
I always try to sneak it in.
Thank
Two-thirds of Legal Face-Off. You can find it at WGNplus.com. Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN.
A red-headed stranger from Blue Rock, Montana, rode into town one day, and under his knees was a raging black stallion, walking behind was a bay.
The redheaded stranger is not really a stranger to us. His name is Jim Stoker. Hi, Jim.
Hi, how you doing today?
It's so nice to meet you. Last year, I heard about this event, and it was we had something planned that day because I happen to have one redhead, and this is a gathering of the most redheads in one place. This is Redhead Days Chicago, and it happens out in Highwood. Last year was the first annual.
Yes, in Highwood, correct.
And this year would make it what, Bill?
Probably the second annual. I can show you my work on that.
Yes.
Second annual. Okay.
But they just had their 10th annual in Breda, Holland, which is where this originated.
Right. I had read about that, and Holland is a bit of a travel, although Highwood's pretty far for me to get to also. But obviously there are more redheaded people in, where was the original one?
In Holland, in
yeah,
southern Holland, near the Belgian border.
And how many people did they get?
Well, when I chanced across it 4 years ago, we had almost 2,000 for
wow,
the picture in the park. And so to be in a crowd of 2,000 redheads was, you know, very different for
they
me.
They had more people attended the event, but it was just 2,000 plus that were redheads.
Right. Well, yeah, in the picture on Sunday. Yeah, I mean, it's a three-day event, but it, you know, it's been going on for 10 years, so it's been building.
And you went to it, and that's what gave you the idea to do it a little closer to home, because obviously you live in this area.
Correct. And since I own a restaurant in Highwood, there's always that shameless self-promotion
thing. Get to the bottom of it. What's it called?
It's called Alex's Washington Gardens.
Awesome.
Italian place. So.
Congrats. That's nice. So what goes on at the festival? What sort of events?
Well, we're doing a lot more this year. Last year, it was mostly just a gathering in the park, but we did have music and drinks and food and stuff, a lot of red drinks and red food and things. And this year, we've got all sorts of things going on. We have like a children's petting zoo, pony rides. There's like a whole children's area. And then there's sort of what I call restaurant and bar row, like Miss Mary's Bloody Mary's is coming. The Redhead Piano Bar is coming to serve wine and champagne. My restaurant is serving some of our pizza and cocktails. Van Gogh Vodka is a sponsor because, you know, Van Gogh was a redhead.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And Two Gingers Irish Whiskey because, you know, that's a natural tie-in. And
Do you like when somebody calls you a ginger?
You don't care? It's not my favorite thing.
Yeah.
I mean, there are worse things people have called me.
The redheaded stepchild. That comes
up a lot.
Oh,
that's a
too.
Fun one, isn't it?
Why?
Why so negative? Why all the bad connotations? I don't get it.
I don't know. I mean, people will say things to us redheads, especially redheaded boys, they won't say to any other, you know, group.
They think the redheaded girls are beautiful, but they think the redheaded boys are dorky. I have one. He's not dorky. You're not dorky.
Well, thank you. You're so kind.
It's just unusual. I don't even know how I got a redhead. Mm-hmm. I know that it's a recessive gene, and my grandmother was Italian and had four redheaded sisters, but not... And why do they say redhead? It's more orange. Help me with all this stuff.
These are not things I have answers for, I can't tell you. Just being one doesn't qualify me.
Jim, when I was a kid, I don't remember ever hearing the term ginger. It wasn't until maybe 10, 12 years ago that I heard it. And you know why I heard it? And this is terrible. There were schools doing days called Kick a Ginger Day, where you'd just go up to a guy or girl with red hair, and you had free reign to kick them because they had a red hair.
I think that started on South Park.
Yes, that was on South Park, because gingers have no souls.
Yes. Called us the spawn of Satan and all sorts of bad things.
That's
like
probably
that.
Not true, is it?
Probably not true.
No, of course
yeah.
not.
But no, I'd never heard ginger until about 10 years ago as well.
Yeah.
But someone did explain to me that comes from the Yiddish or Hebrew word for ginja, which means red.
Oh.
And that's where that comes from.
Makes more sense now.
Because gingivitis makes your gums bleed, which is red. Right. See, I figured it all.
When you solved the crime.
Thank God I took Latin, which I didn't. I was going to ask you something else about red hair, and I completely forgot about... Oh, well, I know that they redheads have the most hair. When you talk about follicles, I've done a lot of research. Once you have a redhead, you start looking it up. They have more hair follicles than any other color of hair.
Okay.
You didn't know that?
Well, I know I have a lot of hair.
Blow your mind.
You do have a lot of hair, so what Wendy says is probably true. Now, there was a story a couple years ago where they said that the redhead person will be phased out at some point. There won't be any more people with red hair, but that's not true.
No, I don't think so. But I guess there's a chance that over a long period of time it might go away, but it's nothing imminent.
Don't you think there are more redheads, or is it because I have one that I notice it more? Because I think my high school of 2000, maybe there were... three redheaded kids, and now
every
class...
Oh, we had a bunch at our school.
Did you?
Yeah, we had a lot. And usually, not always, but usually, it would be a family where they'd have five or six kids, and all of them would have red hair. You've seen that a bunch, right?
Sure.
Yeah, that happens.
But I'm the only one in my family that has red hair.
Really?
Yeah.
Isn't that just wild?
Yeah.
How that happens? When Michael was born, my mom was, she loved redheads. She said, oh, I always wanted you to have a redhead. She passed away a month after I got married. A year after that, I was pregnant, had our first baby, and lo and behold, it was like Bozo. It was red, it was orange hair. And I said, thanks, Mom. And when we went to...
Those giant shoes didn't help either. Yeah. You know that in retrospect, looking back.
Here's the funniest thing, and I'm sure you've heard a lot of things about being a redhead. There was a woman who we saw at the supermarket when we were taking Michael home from the hospital. He was a couple weeks old, maybe. And there was a woman in her 80s, and she said, oh, I love that red hair. You don't know how much I would spend to get that color in a bottle. You've heard that before,
yes,
right?
Yes, many times.
I bet I'm going to wow you with what this lady said. She said, do you know why there are redheads? And I said, no, I have no idea. And she said, you and your husband didn't do it enough. Hmm. And I said, what? Hmm. She goes, little rusty.
Oh,
little rusty.
82 years old. That's what she tells me. Had you ever heard that before?
No, I haven't.
All right, put that in your arsenal. Share that at Redhead Days, won't you?
I will.
Jim Stoker is here from Redhead Days. Give the website again for people who want to know.
Well, Facebook is the best page. Way. It's RHD Chicago. So mm-hmm. Redhead Days Chicago, all one word, and that has the latest information and probably a picture being posted of me right now doing this. So.
Coming up on June 4th and 5th, in Highwood.
Yes.
June 5th. It's been a long day. All right, so both days, mm-hmm. all kinds of events.
Yes.
You don't have to have red hair, certainly,
no,
to
attend. No, it's redheads or their admirers.
Right.
And we don't check, just in case.
Okay. You know. That would be awkward for everybody.
One of the highlights of this Saturday is the Carrot Cake Throwdown. So,
What is that?
Well, it's a carrot cake contest, basically, to see who has the best carrot cake. You know, carrot top, carrot cake.
Oh, that'd be good.
And that's so a taste test.
Yeah, so I brought you three carrot cakes. I brought one, a beautiful one here from Nothing Bundt Cake.
I've had that. Awesome.
Beautiful.
And then the Bent Fork, which is one of the great little bakeries in Highwood, sent one.
Mm-hmm.
And then the one that's actually the best is the one made by my wife for a restaurant at Alex's Washington Garden. So, you know, you got to say this one's the
best. Can't wait.
How many people showed up last year for this?
1,100 redheads filled out a form and said they were redheads, and we estimate about 2,500 over the 2 days.
It's doubled.
We're hoping to double or triple that this year.
The spectrum of people with red hair, I mean, it's not just one shade. You can have, there's 30 different shades, right?
Right, and actually that's our theme this year is 50 Shades of Red. You know,
that's
playing
nice.
With that a little
you
bit.
Guys that's well done.
Are all over
that's
this.
That's beautiful.
Yes, and so we have a selection of T-shirts and shades and colors.
When there's a celebrity, Jim, who's prominent and has red hair, that's good for business, kind of, in a way, right? If there's somebody like Christina Hendricks from Mad Men who's getting some attention.
Benedict Cumberbatch.
Lucille Ball at some point, right?
Yes.
It became very fashionable. Women wanted to have their hair look like Lucille Ball for a mm-hmm. long time. Yeah.
All right, we have to take a break. We'll continue. If you're a redhead, you can call in or you can just lie about it. 312-981-7200. It's Bill. It's Wendy. And it is Jim Stoker, founder of Redhead Days Chicago on 720 WGN.
All right, Jim Stoker is here. I keep wanting to say Stecker, but in German it was Stecker, right, Jim?
Yes, that is correct.
Call him what you want. I'll tell you this for a fact. He is the founder of Redhead Days in Chicago. It's coming June 4th and 5th. Redhead Days is coming to Highland Park. On Facebook, you want to go to RHD Chicago. That's the Facebook page. All the information's there.
Kim Gordon is up in the newsroom. You have a couple of redheaded kids, don't you?
I do. I have two redheaded boys, my two youngest.
And somebody wanted to call in because I want to check the statistics on this. This is Bridget on the line. Hi, Bridget.
Hello.
Are you a redhead?
No, my daughter is a redhead. And one time we were shopping and someone stopped to talk to us and they said that she has blue eyes and they said that having red hair and blue eyes is actually very rare, that most redheads have
green eyes.
No, like
brown eyes.
What color are your eyes?
I have blue eyes. My understanding, redhead in general is 2% of the population and only half of that has blue eyes. So 1% of the population is
very rare.
With blue eyes. Correct.
I have a redheaded blue-eyed monster.
He's a collector's item, Wendy. Don't sell him.
Keep him.
Well, we don't have blue eyes.
Irish royalty.
Irish royalty.
Yeah,
I'll start treating him nicer.
Red hair.
Well, thank you, Bridget. Yeah. You should go to Redhead Days. It's happening in Highwood.
We mentioned earlier that there has been some ribbing to the redheaded community, and Wendy guessed, and I think this is probably accurate. It's because the numbers are so rare, right? Somebody's different. Sadly, sometimes they get made fun of. I don't get it, but that's how it plays.
Yeah, I've been picked on my whole life, especially as a little kid. So you're always on the outside looking in, and you know. But we know we're smarter, faster, funnier than anyone else. But it just isn't appreciated.
You know who you're a dead ringer for? Rick Sutcliffe, who used to pitch for the Cubs. Do you get that ever?
Yeah, once in a while.
People tell you, yeah.
Mostly lately, I get Chuck Norris. You know,
I can see Chuck Norris, by the way.
So redheaded people, I just don't understand why they get made fun of. And as you mentioned, we talked about because you're different. But I mean, it's just a hair color. I really don't understand it. Somebody had said that the term ginger came from Ginger from Gilligan's Island.
Ginger Grant, Tina Louise.
But people didn't. You mentioned another ginger who wasn't redheaded.
Yeah, Ginger Rogers, you know, was very popular in the late 40s and through the 50s and stuff, and was blonde. Yeah, so I think she was named more for the root than she was her red hair, which didn't exist.
Well, yeah, because ginger isn't really. We talked about this off the air. Ginger isn't the red.
No, it's kind of a yellow pussy looking. you know, spice or whatever you call
when
it.
When are Yellow Pussy Days coming to Highland? That's going to be.
Count me in.
That's going to be.
I'm a blonde. I can fit right in.
People line up for blocks
we
to
need
get
to
into
start that.
That
for
so
sure.
Ginger is not accurate. It should be paprika.
Right.
Yeah, or cayenne, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
We should change that. Have a movement.
Yeah, it's, and redheads are spicy anyway.
You know, this is
anyway.
Killing me. Looking out the window. One of the funnest things I've been doing ever since I've been promoting this is I hand out these cards, and you walk up to a redhead, and you hand it to him. You say, I think you need this. And it just, the look on their face.
Oh, sure.
They just light up like you've never seen. And
sure, because they're getting positive attention
by.
For once.
Yeah.
It's really terrible that redheads get made fun of.
Well,
do you remember,
hopefully we'll grow out of it.
We're going back a couple of years on this, but the Farkle family on Ronan Martin.
Sure.
You remember them?
Right.
Was that good for business or bad for business? For
that was a long
community?
Time ago, but no, that's probably not
probably
a good representation.
Business, right?
Yeah.
Archie Andrews was very popular with
good
the
for
ladies.
Business. Yeah. Yep.
A lot of famous redheads out there, and Jim Stoker is one of them. Founder of Redhead Days Chicago. It's happening this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, right?
Yes, Saturday and Sunday, June 4th and 5th, 11 to 6 on Saturday and 11 to 5 on Sunday, and we're going to have a lot of fun stuff. And the highlight, I think, is Sunday at 2 o'clock when we have one of those drone things that's going to go around and take a picture of all of us gathered in the middle of the park.
Oh, that's a blast.
And with all the same color T-shirt and the red, it'll be quite a sight. So,
what color goes well with a red-headed head? Like a green T-shirt?
Green, blue, purple is my particular favorite. And that's usually the colors they've been selecting in Holland. And like last year, we did blue. We did a Van Gogh blue from one of his paintings because Van Gogh's a redhead, and yesterday was like his 150th, or last year was his 150th. Birthday.
He looks great, by the way. Have you seen him?
He's a man.
Do you cover up one ear when you're posing for the picture? Go to their Facebook page. It's RHD Chicago, like Redhead Days Chicago. And again, why don't you plug your restaurant so people can stop in Highwood and
sure.
have some carrot cake.
I own Alex's Washington Gardens, which is in beautiful downtown Highwood near the metro station. There's a lot of great restaurants in Highwood and bars. And so after you come to the Redhead Days, please walk around Highwood and frequent all my neighbors and have a good time. It's a great destination town.
Jim, thanks for being here. We appreciate it.
I really appreciate you having me here.
Well, that's Jim Stoker, everybody. We're going to take a quick break. Kim with the news and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
He knows which movies make you laugh and which ones make you cry. If you love films, then Dean's your guy. So grab yourself some popcorn. He will not talk about hard boys.
He's Dean.
He's Dean Richards. And Wendy, this has been a very difficult time for Dean, who has now gone 6 days without being honored in any way, shape, or form.
Turns out that tomorrow I'm getting a Nobel Prize.
Tomorrow, Dean? That's fantastic.
Yeah. I was feeling a little bit of withdrawal, but I just got the call from Sweden a little while ago, and it turns out that my Bozo, Gar, and Ray special
got the Nobel Prize?
Has been considered something that's made life better for humanity.
Sure, the planet.
And I'm honored to receive that.
That well is deserved. A great special.
Well deserved.
Love it.
I know you were also named the National League Player of the Month for the month of May, and that's not bad.
I was. And Miss Polish Chicago, which I don't know how I snagged
that. How did that happen? That's
Turns
fantastic.
Out, I guess electrolysis pays off is all I can say.
Yes, it does.
I still wax. I've never made the jump to electrolysis. So
Dean waxes poetically.
Yes,
I
he
do.
Does.
Dean, we just got some late-breaking news about Prince, and I don't know if this is surprising or not, but it is tragic. What do we know now?
He died April 21st, as you'll recall. You and I were speaking when the word had come that Prince had died at his compound. In the Minneapolis area. They said that the autopsy results would take 3 or 4 weeks. It's been more than that. So we are expecting official autopsy results really any day now. But this morning, a law enforcement official who has spoke on the condition of anonymity has told the Associated Press that when those tests are released, it will show that Prince died of an opiate overdose.
Which does not mean heroin, because when this first came up and speculation was beginning, I automatically thought heroin.
Yeah.
But it's painkillers, allegedly.
Apparently. This official, who is said to be very close to the investigation, gave this information out. And the focus of the investigation so far has been whether or not Prince died of an overdose or whether or not, like Michael Jackson, there was a doctor who was prescribing him too much, too many drugs in the weeks leading up to his death. So that we haven't gotten any information on yet. But what is the likely scenario with this that many people have been speculating is that not that Prince was a drug abuser, but was abusing the opioids that were prescribed to him after he had a hip surgery operation. And he used the drugs, according to speculation, because he was in constant severe pain before the surgery, after the surgery. And I don't know that much about, the drugs and how addictive they are. But, you know, if you're in severe pain, you want to try to get the pain down. And the painkiller that has been talked about most often in the result of this is Percocet, which, that's really what we know right now. But this is from an extremely reliable source who is speaking anonymously to the Associated Press that it was an overdose of opioids.
Do you think, Dean, this tarnishes Prince's legacy in any way?
I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I don't think it does musically at all. And even I think anyone who's dealt with chronic and severe pain can relate to this kind of thing, where you're trying to find some relief from unbelievable pain that you're in, and at some point you get caught in this vortex of using these drugs. When you're somebody like Prince or Elvis or Michael Jackson, often there are not a lot of people around you to say, stop it. No, you can't have that. No, you cannot do that. And even if there are people who are saying no, you find other ways to get whatever it is that you want to get to try to relieve the pain. So I don't think it tarnishes. It makes me very sad for him that he obviously must have been in a lot of pain. And like a lot of people get, they get hooked into something and they just can't get off of it. It breaks my heart if all of this is true. And I say these are not the official autopsy results. This is from an anonymous, a highly cited, reliable source. We'll, I'm sure, learn more once the official results come out. But
and Percocet is more addictive than Vicodin, if not taken as prescribed. It contains oxycodone, which is a derivative of morphine, along with Tylenol. And just the fact that he had that alleged overdose in the plane when it had to make a stop in Moline, I just feel like somebody would have been keeping a better eye on him if he just days earlier had that issue.
It's
sad.
All the pieces, knowing some of the things that have been speculated right now make all the pieces come together a little bit more of why that plane that was flying back from an Atlanta concert made an emergency landing in Moline, Illinois, why they felt like they couldn't come all the way to Chicago, which isn't that much further when you're on a plane, from Moline to Chicago, why they decided we must land right now at Moline International Airport and get medical treatment immediately for what can only be presumed to have now been a drug overdose, to get the antidote for that.
And the rumor had it that they wouldn't give him a private room, and that's why he and his staff said, well, then I'm out of here. Who doesn't give Prince a private room?
Who takes, and they were also saying that it was just pneumonia. That's right. They were saying the flu. And, the flu is serious, but you don't land a plane instantly because somebody has the flu. You do when somebody has taken a drug overdose.
And they're not responsive.
And they're not responding, and you need to get, there is a shot that can be given to counteract the effect of that. And that's, if you believe all the speculation on what's now been said, all these puzzle pieces are starting to fit together. I remember that, when this came out and all the speculation was coming out and people were trashing TMZ and trashing, places who were citing reliable sources, it's turning out, again, just like the Michael Jackson death and so many of the other cases that TMZ has been first on, that if this winds up being confirmed by the autopsy results, that TMZ was correct again.
How about that? Dean Richards is with us. In a little bit, Dean will review some of the movies that are coming out on
Friday tomorrow. Impressed with Wendy's drug knowledge.
Oh, yeah.
I looked it up.
It's unbelievable.
You weren't even reading that. I know. That was right off the top of your head.
Yep.
Listen, I had a knee replacement, so I know what it's like to take Vicodin. However, it gives me a headache and gives me a stomach ache, so I tried not to take it. But I can see where you turn to it.
Right.
Because it hurts like hell.
I had a terrible paper cut. Same thing.
Dean, I don't know if you know this. Wendy used to carpool with Rush Limbaugh at our last radio station.
That would explain. So, that explains
a lot. Sure.
So he was an oxy something else.
He was. All right, we'll take a quick break.
More with an ox.
More with Dean next. I don't even know what that means. Dean Richards is here. Several new movies opening this weekend. Dean, the one that my daughters are excited about is Me Before You.
Oh, as they should be.
Yeah, is it romantic?
It's romantic.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Oh.
It's a story of this young woman who becomes the caretaker for a man about her own age. They're probably in their mid to upper 20s, something like that. He was in a terrible accident and has become quadriplegic and requires 24-hour attention. She's not a nurse, but she's there to make meals for him and take care of him and help him in and out of bed and other requirements. And
they fall in love.
Spoiler alert.
He is.
I don't know.
They do fall in love, but that's not the spoiler part of it. But he is, as you might also be, if you were young and vibrant and active and suddenly you're in an accident and you're quadriplegic now, you'd be pretty damn angry about the whole thing.
And
pretty mad at the world and mad at everybody and everything. He is not a pleasant person. But this is a young woman who is played by Emilia Clarke, by the way, of Game of Thrones fame. This is a woman who is full of optimism and innocence and really just puts up with so much abuse from this nasty, nasty guy trying to help them. But as Wendy has spoiled already.
Please.
You haven't. This is not the spoiler part of the story. They get closer. They begin to see commonalities in what they're going through. She's living a life that really she doesn't want to live. And they find kind of a solace in each other. But something happens in their relationship that really tests the unconditional nature of love. This is one of the reasons why I and probably lots of teenage girls were so weepy.
Bill will be crying.
I cried when I saw the preview.
I know.
I cried like a baby in this movie because it's beautiful. I mean, it's a beautiful, they just love each other unconditionally.
Yeah.
And they both are going through such difficult things, and then there are some twists that happen, which I will not spoil for you.
All right.
That in many ways reinforce that unconditional love goes on no matter what happens in a person's life. I really like this movie, and I think we really need a movie like this right now. There's so many. R-rated comedies and
superhero
action
movies.
Superhero movies. Nothing against all those, but it's nice to just have a nice, romantic tearjerker to come out once in a while.
It's nice. You have to cry once in a while,
don't
you?
Why not?
You really do.
Yeah.
And the weird part of this is sometimes we see the movies in theaters with full audiences. This particular movie was just critics. And there's a small little screening room that we go to. There might be 30, 40 people can sit in that room, but it's all critics.
Yeah.
Like the most 40 cynical, the most cynical people you could possibly. So I'm sitting there. It's like, please don't make me start blubbering all over the place in front of everybody else. But everybody, I think, was a little bit weepy at the end with this.
Your chin starts quivering on the lower lip.
My chin was more than quivering. I unashamedly say it's a beautiful. I'm a sucker for unconditional love stories.
Yeah, it is something else.
Emilia Clarke is great in this. Nice to see her doing something
without dragons,
without mythical creatures in it. Sam Kalfin is the man who plays quadriplegic. Vanessa Kirby is in the movie. Charles Dance, some very well-known actors that you will definitely recognize. Dean's List B plus.
Oh, good
for this one. Yeah,
I'm anxious to see that.
That's a weepy B plus.
What about Dean, the Shakespeare classic Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles? I know that's coming out tomorrow. What about that one?
Again, I was in tears.
Sure.
For completely different reasons. For this one, I was crying uncontrollably. Should I kill myself during this movie, or should I wait? So, you know, how long will it go on? It's just not my cup of tea in any way, shape, or form. You know, the turtles have their fan base. People were I saw it last night at the screening last night, and people had their Cowabunga T-shirts
sure.
on, and you know, the little kids were showing up, you know, in turtle gear, and mm-hmm. you know,
probably with the sheets off their bed that they just ripped off their bed.
It's entirely possible. They had. Like little, looked like backpacks, but they were, you know, turtle shells that they were wearing that, you know, you have to be a little bit uncomfortable while you're trying to watch a movie, I would think.
Dean, Wendy and I had a big argument because she's Team Donatello and
yep.
I'm Team Raphael.
No,
and we're
Donatello's
fighting about
the coolest.
That.
Purple's the best.
No, Raphael's way cooler.
Nope.
Okay, you're both this. I can never speak to either of you anymore because everyone knows that you should be Team Leonardo.
Oh, yeah, he's good, too.
He's very cool.
Yeah.
So it's, you know,
it's not for you.
They're shooting for 9-year-olds.
A terrible critic. Not a terrible critic. Wow. Is
you
that,
are not.
Is that revealing?
Come on, Dean.
Is that revealing? A terrible criminal
yeah.
is what I meant to say.
Sure.
But Freudianly speaking, I said critic instead. Yeah. A terrible criminal busts out of jail. He wants to take over the whole world. Only the turtles, of course,
sure.
can help. The people there seem to enjoy it, so I can't really say that it's awful. I will say this, it's rated PG-13. I was a little surprised at some of the language that the turtles were dropping in this movie. There is...
shell no! Were they saying stuff like that?
It's not too far from that. There were some things that, you know, if I took my little nephews to this movie, or my nieces, I guess they would also be a fan... I'm not sure I would like him to hear some of the language.
Oh. Send him to my house first. I can get him used
that
to it.
Was part of all this. That's your prudy Uncle Dean part of it. But you've got a Megan Fox in this, one of the greatest thespians of all time.
Oh.
You've got a Will Arnett. You've got Laura Linney
mm-hmm.
Is in this. And Stephen Amell, who plays Green Arrow on the CW. So there's some familiar faces that you'll see. In
Dean's
this.
List on this one?
Oh,
yeah,
brother.
Yeah.
I'm going to give it a C. I'm not going to say it's bad. I think if you're into the turtles, you'll be fine with this. Otherwise, you know, bring some safety pins with you that you can stick in your eyes.
And Dean, we only have a minute, but I'm anxious to hear about Popstar. That's the Andy Samberg movie.
Fortunately, we don't have much time left because this is one I'm seeing tonight. Have not seen it yet.
I love him.
He's very funny.
I am hearing that it's kind of fun. That it's supposed to be a 90-minute version of the Andy Samberg music videos that we used to see on Saturday Night Live. The digital shorts. He plays a singer-rapper who hits big with his first album. His name is Connor For Real. Second album
That's
comes...
That's your name, Bill.
It was my name.
Second album comes out. Nobody is interested, so he has to figure out a way how to be the dopest star in the world one more time. That's all I know of the premise right now. I'll see it later on tonight. And
Tell us next week.
I'll have more next week.
Excellent.
Tomorrow on Steve Cochran's show. Or I may just go see Me Before You again.
Oh, all right. I'll go with you.
Sneak in. And
I'm going to send you something. All the pranks that Emilia Clarke pulled off on the set of Me Before You, I'm going to send them your way.
Fun. I like her. You know, my Sunday show this week, Sunday morning show, I have an interview with Emilia Clarke and also the New York Times bestselling author of the original novel, Me Before You, Jojo Noyes. They both seemed like really, really nice people.
Excellent.
So I'm happy to hear that she's also a prankster.
Oh, big time.
Yeah.
Whoopee cushions involved in a wheelchair. I'll send you all the info.
Stop. Stop. You're making me fall in love with her even more.
Dean, thank you. Have a great weekend.
With a whoopee cushion. See you guys.
Thanks, Dean. It's Dean Richards. A quick break. We'll find out what Steve has next. It's us, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Welcome back. It is show number 2 in a 2-show day. We get, you know, we have a doubleheader every day.
Yeah, every day is a doubleheader. Every single day. Hi, it's us. It's Bill and Wendy. You know how it works. We say stuff, and then you either agree or disagree, and you can comment at 312-981-7200. That's how it plays out. I showed you a picture of Jacqueline Smith earlier. For people who don't know, Jacqueline Smith was one of the original Charlie's Angels.
How could you not know? Kevin, did you know who Jacqueline Smith was?
I don't know if Kevin would have known.
Yeah, she's one of the original Charlie's Angels.
Kevin did know. I was wrong.
I didn't know.
Kevin, what are the names of the three? Not the actresses'
Sammy,
names. Sammy.
Sammy.
I don't even
Nancy,
think I know.
Nancy.
And
Marlo.
Sam, yep. That's right. Those were your original Charlie's Angels. Sammy, Nancy, and Marlo.
You had Kate Jackson. What was her role? Or her character?
Well, she was Sabrina Duncan.
Okay, you know, someone paid more attention to the Angels. I could tell you Charlie and Mr. Bosley.
Mr. Bosley?
What was his name?
Come on.
Bosworth? Boz, they called him, right?
Right, yeah. Mr. Bosley, right. And then Charlie, of course, John Forsythe.
Right.
Yeah. All right, well, Jacqueline Smith was one of the original Charlie's Angels.
God, what was her name? You don't know either.
Yeah, I do.
Who? What was it?
Well, Jill Kelly and Sabrina were the three original Charlie's Angels, and then Chris took over, Cheryl Ladd took over in season 2 for Farrah Fawcett.
Farrah was Jill.
Yeah.
Kelly was Jacqueline Smith.
Yeah, and Sabrina was Kate Jackson. They teach you this in school. We learned this in school. In
I didn't take
class.
Angels 101. I was in the devil's class.
Oh. All right. The picture of Jacqueline Smith proudly proclaims that she is now 70 years old, and that in and of itself is jarring because you say to yourself, well, Charlie's Angels, I don't remember them being 70 because on the show they were much, much younger. But then because of time lapse, they're 70 now.
We were much younger when we watched it also.
That's true, too. I'll give you that. She is stunning. She's beautiful. She's so beautiful at the age of 70, and it makes me feel good to see that. I'm glad to see that, aren't you?
Yes.
However,
there is no however. I hate, and I have been sucked into this trap, I think, by you.
What's the trap?
When people see somebody and they say, oh, wow, she looks gorgeous, but she's had work done. Who cares?
I never say that. Do you ever hear me say that they've had work done?
Yeah.
I don't say that. Every once in a while, if somebody has had excessive work done, like Mickey Rourke, you'll say to yourself, I think Mickey Rourke is in there somewhere.
Yeah, and
I think that guy used to be Mickey Rourke.
But see, that's where the problem lies. If you have excessive work done and you don't look like yourself anymore, I mean, who was it that came out? Come on, you know her name. People were saying we saw her without makeup, and everybody was blown away by how different she looked.
We had her on the show?
No, I can't think of her name. Blonde hair, she was in, what the heck is her name?
I don't know. Where did you see her? Recently? In real life or on TV?
Oh, she's an actress, and everybody was commenting on her drastic change.
Well, who would that be? How long ago was this?
I can't think of who it is. I'm not continuing until
right.
we can think
All
of
right.
it.
All right. I don't know who you mean. But sometimes somebody will be on, and it's so obvious that they've had some work done.
It's pretty obvious.
Yeah. With Jacqueline Smith,
yes.
Do you think it is? Oh, I don't know. I don't know.
You believe what you want to believe in your little life.
It's
All I'm
possible.
Saying, her lips are like this.
She may have had collagen treatments. She
That's
may
what
have.
I mean. And I don't think there's anything wrong with having work done because I have completely white hair if I would let it just go. White
would you
and
really?
Gray. On my sideburns.
Could you do that? Do
no.
that. I want to see how that looks.
It is so white, like, and above my ears. So white. It looks like white blonde, but it's white. I color my hair. Who cares?
Right.
It's three different colors. I mean, it's obvious I color my hair. I don't care if people get Botox. I really don't. I would if I thought about it and made an appointment,
but if
she has no wrinkles.
All right. You know how part of acting is you have to show emotion? And a lot of times when they have as much extensive plastic surgery done, the days of showing emotion are over. You always look surprised.
Well, that's what I mean. If you do something to enhance your look, who cares?
Right.
It's just when you go overboard like Mickey Rourke,
right.
you can't even identify that person anymore.
Right.
Wayne Newton's another one.
Wayne Newton is a good example.
This is who I was thinking of. Mike, thank you, because I didn't want to continue the show without knowing. Who am I referring to that had all the plastic surgery?
Renee Zellweger.
She had a lot done.
See what? Bill says he never says that.
You don't. It doesn't look at all like the original version of Renee Zellweger anymore.
Absolutely.
It looks like somebody new is playing Renee Zellweger, and that's not
the
case.
The same with Jennifer Grey from...
Yeah, she had... Well, that was mostly just rhinoplasty, mostly. She had her nose done.
But she totally looks different.
Yeah, she does.
She had a little more than that,
Do you think
though.
She did? Yeah.
And
yeah.
Again, Mike, do you care if somebody looks good? Who cares what they've had done? But it's just when they go overboard and completely get hooked on it.
Yeah, that's when their face is all stretched. It's terrible.
They all start looking like cats. God bless Joan Rivers, and I loved her. She started looking like a cat. Carrot Top looks like a cat.
Right.
Burt Reynolds.
Looks like a cat. But have you seen their cats?
Kenny Rogers.
Because their cats now
Kenny
look...
Kenny Rogers, you're right. Got to know when to hold them and know when to fold them, right?
It's just a piece of leather now on their face.
That's the name of his tour. It's the Kenny Rogers Piece of Leather Tour 2016.
Leatherface.
If you bring in leather, you get in for half price.
Mike, thank you so much for solving the great mystery of life, Renee Zellweger.
No problem. You guys are great. Thanks.
Thank you so
Thanks.
Much, Mike. I told you I saw Joan Rivers' daughter, Melissa, was on a show a week ago, and I hadn't seen her in a while, and now she has had an amazing amount of plastic surgery, a whole lot of plastic surgery, because I always thought she was very pretty. I really did. And now it's just she just has the one emotion now, frightened. They were talking to her. She just looked frightened.
I honestly don't care if people get enhancements. Really, I don't.
But own up to them.
Or just keep your original look. Like, just enhance what you have.
Right. Why haven't they perfected this yet? Why?
That is the best question you have asked this century.
I can't imagine why, there's so many doctors doing this. Why can't, and I know there must be some who have done it right, but for the most part.
Because the patients keep going until they look like a cat, and 773 has texted us and said, I have just offended their cat.
Oh, that's not good.
So I'm very, very sorry.
The other, boy, what would this be? Was it last summer or two summers ago? You know how TV Land every year, they do the annual TV Land Awards, and they bring back TV stars from the 70s and the 80s? They had the women on from Knott's Landing, and I thought I was on the Sci-Fi Channel. I turned it on. Because I always thought all the women from Knott's Landing, I thought they were all very pretty. But you know me, I've got a high tolerance for scary stuff. I was hiding under the bed. My wife's like, "What? Come on out. What's wrong with you?" And I said, "Joan Van Ark is scaring me. I can't come out. Donna Mills is going to kill us. I can't come out."
I mean, I guess, you know, I have one tattoo. They say you want to keep getting one, and I do want another one. Is that how you all of a sudden get your whole back covered?
Yes.
That must be the same with plastic surgery. You like how it looks, and you go, I'm going to do more.
Right.
Somebody needs to. I have just created a job. This is my entrepreneurial business.
What is it?
I am the plastic surgery stopper.
You're just going to say to somebody,
you've had enough honey. You look great.
We must draw the line somewhere.
Yeah. Somebody needs to tell them. Don't they have assistance for that?
you would think. Right. You pay all these people to be your publicist and your manager and your agent. You should pay somebody to just go,
I think
we're done with the plastic surgery. I think we've had enough of the plastic surgery. All right. Well, take a look at Jacqueline Smith and decide for yourself. Kevin,
looks beautiful.
Can we put this on our Facebook page or is it too hot? We'll get it up there? All right. We'll have it on there.
If she's hot, yes.
All right. Order in the court. All right.
I'll take a bologna sandwich.
A quick break. And then more of the Marx Brothers next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. We're talking about the picture that just came out of Jacqueline Smith. She was one of the original Charlie's Angels. Kelly Garrett, if you'll remember, back to the 1970s, one of the original three. And then they had Cheryl Ladd came in. She replaced Farrah Fawcett. And then they had Shelley Hack for a while. That didn't last too long.
She was okay, though.
And then
I felt sorry for her.
For Shelley Hack?
She
Why?
Was a fallen angel because it's tough shoes to fill.
Yep.
Tough bikinis to fill,
tough
I should
bikinis
say.
Bikinis to fill.
Although they were more one pieces, weren't they? I know Farrah's poster had her in like a red one piece Speedo, wasn't it?
Yeah. And then...
You okay now?
Right
you need now. Another second?
Yeah, just a second to collect
I
myself.
I can't believe she's gone.
It's hard to believe, isn't it?
Same day as Michael Jackson?
I think a day or two. I think separated by a day. Maybe the same day, but I thought there was
really?
A day of separation. And then do you remember the sixth and final of the original Charlie's Angels? There was one more after Shelley Hack didn't work
Kay
out.
Ballard?
They tried one more. It was not Kay Ballard. No. It was Tanya Roberts.
Oh, you're right. I'm sorry.
She was on there, too.
You know what's funny, though, is we have Mike, who is he shadowing Kevin? Is that what's going on?
Yeah.
And Mike had a different recollection of the Charlie's Angels.
His version of the Charlie's Angels was the movie version of the Charlie's Angels.
Which
with
was
Cameron Diaz and Drew Barrymore and Lucy Liu, which purists, you and me, refuse to recognize as the real Charlie's Angels because it's not.
I'm not going to put myself in the purist category with Charlie's Angels.
No.
I really don't care.
You know, I watch those religiously at Wednesday nights. I don't think when I was a kid, I may have missed an episode or two. But I've gone back and I've seen like 2 minutes here and 3 minutes there. And I always feel guilty now as an adult for having spent any amount of time, much less watch it every Wednesday. That was ridiculous that I devoted that much time to Charlie's
Angels. Well, the plot was great in every episode.
They did have great storylines. They had very believable storylines.
Such a man. Hi, Tina.
Hi, how are you?
Good. We were talking plastic surgery, and I'm totally for it. I think it's fine, but when you take it to the extreme where you don't even look like your original self, you start looking like a cat. Or as someone just texted and said, everybody looks like that puppet Madam.
From Wayland Flops, yeah. Madam, yeah.
Like once they've gone too far.
I kind of look at it this way. It's kind of like when you paint your living room and you look around and it's like, wow, those walls look great, but now my carpet looks terrible and then my couch looks bad and then you have to start changing other things. So I just kind of don't paint my walls.
That makes sense.
It's right on the mark, Tina. I think you have nailed it because then you're like, oh, my God, the Botox works and I don't have any lines on my forehead. I'm going to get some cheek implants because that's going to look good. Yep. And then a dimple in your chin.
Yep, exactly. And then you start looking like Michael Jackson
He really transformed.
His nose came off.
Yeah,
he didn't
have
a nose anymore at some point. That's too far.
Yeah, so.
Great analogy, Tina. Thank you so much.
Have a good one, guys.
Thank you, too.
Wasn't it Geraldo Rivera who took some of the fat from his butt and put it in his cheeks?
Did he? I didn't know that. Wow.
Butt face.
That literally butt face.
I know.
He really is. You can call him that now.
I think he did do that.
Wow. Who thought of that? How did that become an option?
I don't know, but I should do it. Although, do you know how big my head would be then?
You'd have a big head. Right.
Hi, Susan.
Uh-oh,
oh, you know
Susan's
what? We can't
away.
Hear you. Take us off of mute.
Hold on.
No. Can you hear me now?
No.
I can hear her very faintly.
She's
like
way,
she's sitting
way,
on
way
our
off.
Shoulder.
Right. She's way, way off in the distance.
She works for a plastic surgeon. Get the plastic surgery. And then the other Susan on my other shoulders, you don't need the plastic surgery.
Right. Right. It's angel and devil plastic surgeon.
All right. We cannot hear
her. Are you going to get, you said it as though you were thinking about it at some point. Would this be an option for you at some point? Would you get it?
I want to get Botox on my 11 lines.
The 11 lines? I'm not familiar.
One and one.
Oh, just so that's on your forehead.
You have them too. In between your eyebrows.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
When you know.
When you scrunch your face
yes,
up.
Yes.
Yeah.
You get the 11 lines. And I mean, I notice them now in pictures.
Uh-huh.
I have lines on my forehead, which I didn't have before.
If you scrunch the other way, we could play tic-tac-toe on your forehead.
On yours too.
That would be mean.
Oh.
Don't do that to me.
Seriously.
That would be too mean.
Is this the same girl who works for a plastic surgeon?
Yes, but now she's slightly closer. Every time she calls, she'll be a little bit closer.
No, this is Therese. She's a different girl. So we've got like a minute here. What did you want to say?
Okay. I just want to tell you, yes, I did work for a plastic surgeon here in the city. And it's amazing that you see husbands and significant others bringing in boyfriend or girlfriend or wife and get updates. Like they've already had the plastic surgery, but let's tone it up a little more. Let's pull it a little tighter.
That's weird.
It's very weird.
So they're never satisfied. No matter how much you do, they want a little bit more.
It's like when I used to trim my own bangs when I was younger. You can never get it perfect, so you keep trimming and trimming and trimming until
right.
you have no bangs
but
anymore.
But your hair grows out. Your face won't grow out.
That's a good point.
So, wow. And you can't dissuade them from that, right, Therese? You have to just say if they come in and want more, you go, yeah, we'll set you up. We'll get you more.
I know. And then I take them out and I take a picture of them so that we have a beginning. And I'm looking at these women and they're not real happy. Not the majority of them. They're
sure,
because like, wow.
They look like the Thundercats.
There you go.
But can't you show you them? Therese, can't you just say, you know, we'll do whatever you want, but if I, or even the doctor should say, you know, in my professional opinion, here, let's look at the before picture.
Right.
If we do this, you're going to look like a cat.
And they have done that, but it's not them that wants it. It's the husband or the significant other. And I've seen so many disasters from this that I really feel bad for the women, but you guys are great. Please do not go away.
Oh,
I love
okay.
you guys.
Thank you so much, Therese. This is very
right.
kind.
Bye. Thank you.
I bet they're not even allowed to play You're the Cat in the waiting room at the plastic surgeon's office.
And Al Stewart is very mad about that. Furious. He wants the residuals.
I know. All right, we need to take a break. Steve has the news, and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy WGN.
Dearly beloved, I'm going to go into a Prince song.
Yep.
We are gathered here together to celebrate the marriage of Bill and his pet gibbon. What's the name of your pet gibbon?
My gibbon's name is Peanut, and you know I would never marry Peanut the gibbon. That's ridiculous.
No. We have Akilah Easter in the studio. You are the owner and operator of Etiquette Femme. Or I would like to say FOMM, because it's F-E-M-M-E, the French pronunciation.
Listen to Wendy showing off, Akilah.
Was reading a little something about wedding etiquette, and this is the biggest wedding month, isn't it? June.
Yes, yes.
In all the world or just in the Chicago area?
Mainly all the world. Mainly all in the world. People love the summer months. They like to have outdoor weddings, those different types of things.
Yeah.
Hopefully they won't get rained out with our weather. But yeah, June is going to be a big month. You should have gotten the invites probably in April for these weddings that are coming up.
You know what Kevin did, and this is smart, and I see more and more people doing this, is they'll send out prior to the wedding invitation a save the date
save
thing. That's
date.
A great idea.
Mm-hmm. Especially for people who need to travel. So if you have to get your funds and everything together, you want family to come from across the country or maybe from another country, you need to give them some heads
sure.
up. Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Kevin, I'm just curious, was this your idea or Sarah's idea, the save the date?
Anything that we have done right has been Sarah's idea.
I believe
isn't that the most perfect thing to say?
Yeah. Kevin really didn't is. Tell you he's when lying. He booked you that he's getting married?
No, we would have had a discussion before. No, no, he did
he's
not.
He's bashful
let me know.
About it. He's very bashful about it. Now, what you want to do when you get an invitation to a wedding is you want to promptly send that back, and you want to make sure, like if it's for one or for two people, you never want to exceed that limit under any circumstances, correct?
Please do not write in somebody's name
right.
on an invite. Within 3 days, you should respond to the RSVP.
Whoops.
That should be
3 months or 3 days?
3 days.
3 days.
3 days.
And if you cannot make it, if you have RSVP'd, you still need to let them know
right.
of that change. But some people assume that they can bring their kids, if their kids' names are not
no.
listed. No. It's only the people's names
no.
who are on the actual invite.
So if it says and family, you're welcome to, correct?
Hopefully you didn't address and family. Family, because family could be 20 people. You can say and guest. So
or Mr. and Mrs. Yeah.
Yes.
But if it's worded, because even the same thing etiquette wise for like a graduation party or something, if
correct.
It comes to Mr. and Mrs., it's
that's
just the two of you.
Yes, because you're limited tickets. So
right.
it's limited plates, those different types
some
of things.
Some couples can't afford to have, like if they know you real well and you're not dating anybody, it'll just be to you. You can't
right.
just assume ever. They probably mean in a guest because you can't.
And especially if it's not a serious relationship, you probably don't want to bring that date to a wedding. So
true.
Yeah.
So true.
Yes.
So true.
Here is a wedding etiquette issue. I've been married for 18 years.
Awesome.
Bill, 25.
It'll be 25 in a few weeks.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
And are you married?
No, I'm not.
Wait.
But I've been to thousands of weddings.
Yeah.
And I'm the 27 dresses, right? So I've been in a lot of different weddings.
Yeah.
I've seen it fall apart in front of my eyes. Mm. Yes.
I have to throw out this little etiquette question.
Okay.
When I got married, you and I were working at another radio station, and there were a couple of people there that we really liked. And there were a couple people there that I wasn't so fond of, but I felt politically I had to invite them. How does that work in a workplace situation?
You should invite your coworkers if you're inviting one. I know it's your day and everything, but hopefully they won't come because they know that you guys don't have that type of relationship, but it is a nice gesture. Or sometimes I would tell my brides to maybe invite them to the luncheon or something to that effect, one of the events, so they do actually have some type of connection to that day.
But it gets weird
what
because
if there's 20 people.
Yeah, if you work in an office where there's 20 people and there's maybe four or five you see socially, a couple you're polite with, you don't know who's in and who's out. And you always, I remember Wendy, you're like, I got
to
invite the boss.
You
and I said,
to.
But we don't like our boss. He said, I know, but we have to invite him.
I didn't say that. You
no,
did.
Did not say that. Well, I mean, I always get down to it's your day. So if you want to spend money on inviting people that you're not too fond of, you can open that door, but it is in the end your day to invite the people. But be prepared for coming back to work after enjoying that lovely wedding.
Someone told me when I was getting married that take time to enjoy your own wedding, because a lot of times you're really worried about things, getting the picture. I am a type A personality. I'm a bit of a control freak. Yes. But on the day of my wedding, my sister-in-law, Sheila, God love her, was late for the pictures. I didn't care. Yeah. We took pictures. Before the wedding, she's not in them. After the wedding, she is. No big deal. I was told you're not going to have any fun at your wedding. I arrived at the wedding with my bridal party, including my sister as my maid of honor, my niece, two nieces and a nephew, with a bottle of Korbel champagne in one hand, a Miller Lite in the other, and a smoke in my mouth.
We were shocked to see it, Akilah. Those of us in attendance were shocked.
Really?
It was the most fun I've had in my life.
It is your day.
We missed the receiving line because we were a little late, and so we went table to table to say hello. Perfect. And I liked that even better.
Right. You got to see everybody who was there. If it was maybe somebody on your spouse's side who you didn't know, you got a formal introduction. Yep. So yeah, it's your day. I think the stress level is so high all the way up to that day that that morning you're just like, I don't care. You know, just whatever happens, happens. And that's the best advice. You can't control it. I know you say you're type A. I do too. But that's when you have to let go. And that's the purpose of your bridal party. That bridesmaids or that maid of honor is supposed to be there to take care of all those little things.
What do you think of this, Akilah? My wife and I decided we were going to pay for everything. We didn't want to be influenced by her parents or my parents. Ooh. We wanted to call all the shots. So we paid for everything.
Right.
We knew we had a limit of 105 people. And she and I talked, my wife and I, and we said, let's invite the people that mean most to us. Sometimes it was friends over relatives. Mm-hmm. A lot of relatives got upset because there's always a thing in a family. Hey, I came to your wedding. He came to my wedding. I came to his kid's wedding.
Right.
But we really wanted the people that were closest to us. There's relatives that are still mad at me. It's been 25 years. They're still holding a grudge. They should let that go, right?
Yeah, get over it.
Yeah,
it's going your day.
Well, they will soon because I invited them to Kevin's wedding as a way of making it up to them.
We paid for our own wedding too, and we got stuck paying a lot more because there were relatives we could not leave off the list.
Well, it's your day.
We just felt the pressure from
the long
both
term.
Sides.
Yes, we'd and get mom the list was like
the list for my mother-in-law was bigger than the whole wedding.
Yeah.
Mom has a list. Dad has a list. Yeah. Now it's your day though. But yeah, if you can't invite the whole family, just let them know. Probably send them like a nice little gift or a booklet of everything that happened. Let them know.
Here's
about
all
the
fun we
day.
Had without you.
Yeah.
Draw a stick figure. Here's where you could have been in the family photo.
Everybody wave. Yes.
Right. We were all here. Too bad you weren't invited.
But don't you honestly think people understand that, especially nowadays?
You would hope so, especially if they've gone through a wedding. They know the stress that's associated with it. So you'd hope that they could translate that to what you had to do with picking who you could allow to come.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And is it offensive to decline going to a wedding?
No, not at all. A lot of times you may not be able to afford, especially if it's out of state, those different types of things.
True.
Hopefully that friend will understand your financial situation.
Right.
You can send a gift to them directly from their registry.
Can you send a less expensive gift since you didn't attend? And I'm not saying that to be cheap.
No, that makes sense, doesn't it?
Actually, etiquette stipulates that you should not ask for gifts for the wedding. But yes, it's okay to send a less expensive gift, whatever you can afford, because that's just saying that we're wishing you luck on your nuptials.
Akilah, if you don't want to go to somebody's wedding, what's the best bogus excuse to put on the invite?
You don't
what's
have to put it, just circle yes or no.
So sorry, cannot attend.
I've said my regrets, but send that gift immediately and then they'll forget about it because they'll get the gift before the wedding.
Oh, that's true too. Okay, that's
or
a good
forget
point.
To send the gift and then they forget they ever invited you.
That's brilliant. That's brilliant.
No, I know brides who keep lists of who they got their gifts from.
Oh, yeah,
so yes.
Sure.
So what is the going rate? This is, I think, the question of all questions. My cousin is going to a wedding by herself.
Okay.
And it's a friend, but not real close. They're in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So what is the going rate with one person? I said probably $100 at this point.
If you're not close to the family, $75 to $100 is a good start. Mm-hmm. If you bring a date, you want to double that. Mm-hmm. Now, the old saying is you want to pay for your plate, but a lot of etiquette coaches go against that now. So $75 to $100 if you're distant, and if it's your close relative, $100 to $150. And if you're a rich relative, you give what you want.
Yeah.
And Kevin, how much are your plates, by the way, just so we can figure out how much to give you?
She's hitting the nail on the head.
Yeah, somewhere in the 75 to 100 range, yeah.
But that's it. It used to be, you know, $100 for you and your date to go.
Sure,
and now it's at least 200 if you bring... And if it's someone closer, if it's family, don't you have to go more like 225, 250?
Yes. Well, American weddings are the most expensive. So other countries laugh at us about how much money we spend on our weddings for that one day versus a down payment on a house. But yeah, so those are, you're going to increase because if you think about the venues, particularly the Chicago area, so it would probably be the cost of living in that area too would dictate that price.
But you can, if you want to, you can give a gift that's not on any registry and not give money. You can make them something out of popsicle sticks. They would love to see that.
No, you
can't.
It is okay. But if they do a registry, know that they've taken time out to pick those gifts out, and that's what they need and that's what they want. And if you do go off of the registry, sign in to let them know so they're not getting duplicate gifts. Some people will just see the registry and go to the store and pick it up and not say, well, I'm here for the Easter party, something to that effect.
So, right.
So if you don't do it online, tell the salesperson that
can
to
you take
it
off
the list.
Yes. Or they're going to get 20 duplicates.
Yeah. Before we take a quick break, and listeners, if you have any questions, 312-981-7200, Akilah Easter, owner and operator of Etiquette Femme, etiquettefemme.com is the website. If you give a nice gift and that wedding dissolves within under a year, can you write them a letter to want your gift or your money back?
What a great question.
No. You can't pull that back. Hopefully, they may have the proper etiquette and try to return those gifts.
Who does
that? Has that ever happened?
Nobody
does. That's never happened. No, of course not. Any questions or comments? Akilah Easter is our guest, the owner and operator of etiquettefemme.com. We're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
The traditional music, or you could have I Knew the Bride When She Used to Rock and Roll. That was played at my reception.
Mm-hmm.
It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, and we're talking to Akilah Easter, owner and operator of Etiquette Femme. We are talking about wedding etiquette. June is the biggest month for weddings, but they happen all year long.
Yes.
And we have some questions from the listeners, so you will have to put those headphones on if they're plugged in.
Great.
And is this Lewis? Hi, Lewis.
Hi, I was wondering, is the father of the bride obligated to pay for the wedding?
Lewis, no, not with modern weddings. Most of the time, 70% of couples have been paying for their own weddings at this point. Yes, the father of the bride is not obligated. If he would like to contribute, or if he would like to maybe pay for the bridal shower or some type of event prior to the wedding, that's always a great gesture.
Akilah,
I was always under that impression. However, it seems like most people I run into, they expect the bride's father to pay for the wedding.
Do you think that goes on still? I don't.
Not with modern weddings, especially with the price of modern weddings. A lot of parents would think that their children are losing their minds with the cost of weddings. So no, most, like I stated, 70% of couples have been paying for their own weddings.
Lewis, do you have a daughter or two or three or four or five that you're worried about?
Well, I have one daughter. This happened several years ago. I gave her money, but I told her I wasn't going to pay for the whole wedding.
Right.
And she was upset with that. She and her boyfriend, or her husband now, they both thought that I should have paid for the wedding.
Had you discussed that prior, or?
No.
Okay.
No.
She just had the expectation.
It's always, in the crowd that she ran around with, it was always that way.
Okay.
You know, the
father
parents.
Paid.
Well, that's how it used to be at, like, in the 50s and 60s
for years and years
70s.
Right, and you were marrying your daughter off, so now women are working, so they have their own financial backing now as well.
Well, Lewis, hope you had a good time anyway. What about the rehearsal dinner? Is that still customary for the bride's parents to handle that?
It's actually anybody within the wedding. So just the couple can't give their own, pay for their own. But anybody who's close to them can offer to pay for the rehearsal dinner.
What a good idea. Mm-hmm. Both families should pitch in to pay for that.
Definitely.
I think that's a great idea.
That's
and then
fine.
The couple pays for their wedding.
Right.
Seems fair. All right. Some other questions. Renee is on the line. Hi, Renee. This is Akilah Easter. We're talking weddings.
Hi, Akilah, Bill, and Wendy. How you doing?
Great,
Hi.
Thanks. What was your question?
I was wondering about the out-of-state or destination weddings. What would be an appropriate gift?
hopefully they have registered just to give you some type of hints.
But wait a second. You're also paying for a ticket to go out there.
Thank
so
you.
Yes, they do. Yeah. It is still kind of expected to give a gift. It can be a smaller gift, like I suggested, but a lot of people who are having destination weddings do not anticipate a lot of people coming to their wedding, to be honest.
So a gift would be more appropriate than cash? I mean,
both of those are considered gifts. So yeah. Cash is considered okay.
And but how's this? If you give a gift, you could spend a little less, couldn't you?
Yes. And when you give cash, you're stuck at that amount versus you get a nice $20 gift. And that would be your flight and everything else will be the gift of being there.
Although $20, really?
I would say it. If you're flying there and those are the different things, you can find a great gift that looks a lot more than it actually
is.
There you go. Thank you, Renee. Safe travels.
Let's say, Akilah, somebody attends your wedding and doesn't bring you a gift or send you a gift, and they say, you know, I'll get you the gift. Don't worry about it. And then
if they're saying that, they're never
25 years pass and they have not given you a gift
what
yet.
What did I not give you?
You weren't. It's not you. It's not you. It's not you.
I would bring it up every time I saw it. No, you have 3 months to give a gift.
Right.
I know some old sayings is a year, but you do have 3 months to send a gift. Hopefully they're not that taboo to where they came to your wedding, enjoyed your food, enjoyed your hospitality, and didn't bring a gift.
But you, if you're one of the people who had that happen, you never want to bring that up.
You don't
up.
Want
That's
to bring
bad.
It up.
You just let it go.
You may just give them that little look every
right.
time you see them.
Right, stare yes. at them. Stare
just mention their name on the radio. Who is it?
I'm not saying
just
their
say
name. I'm not saying Ken's name. It's okay. ridiculous. I won't do it.
All right, Kate is on the line. Kate, you have a good question for Akilah Easter.
Hi.
Hi, Kate.
My son's getting married this summer, and his fiance has some family members. They have 4 and 5 children.
Yes.
And I said, you know, just put Mr. and Mrs. so-and-so and not include family. Is that the correct way to do it? Because,
correct.
I mean, then you have 6 people coming for one family?
No.
That's crazy.
Only the people whose names are listed on the invitation are those who are to come to the wedding, or it should say guest singular. Do not put plural. Do not put family. Only who's listed on the invite.
Okay. Well, what happens if they return the reply card and it says, you know, you've invited 2 people and they put down 6?
You suck it up and deal with it, and then you bitch about it years later like I did.
The rest of your life.
I have seen that people write in who they're bringing to the wedding. Sometimes the mother of the bride has called that guest to let them know, you know, we're limited.
Can you do that?
Yes. Don't put it on the bride or the groom, but you can have somebody in the party just say, you know what? We're limited to this number of people.
Right.
And the kids may not really enjoy. There's alcohol being served and those different types of things.
Yeah. And how many times do people then say, well, we're not coming?
Yep. I've heard that too. Yep. And people have not come to the wedding.
That'd be fine.
Yeah.
I'm so with you,
Kate. We worked it out.
You know, when you're putting that list together and you're writing it hoping, God, I hope they don't come. I hope they don't come.
Right.
It's terrible that it's become that, though.
Yeah, you're just trying to make the gesture, but then those are all the people who will show up.
Mm-hmm. There you go, Kate. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Thanks, Kate. What about speeches at the reception? A lot of times, you know, the best man and the maid or matron of honor, they'll make a speech.
Yes.
But if you're not scheduled to be a speaker, you don't want to interrupt and make a speech, do you? That's bad etiquette.
Yes. Then that can take up to an hour. Everybody wants to reminisce. Only the maid of honor or the best man should make the toast.
Yeah.
And then the bride or groom respond to that. And that should be
it. And that's it.
Mm-hmm. The parents, though, I've seen parents come, you know, not everybody, but sometimes a parent. A dad of the bride or something wants to say something.
They'll step up. And, you know, you can't stop mom or dad. But sometimes they do their toast at the rehearsal dinner.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at Kevin's wedding, I have selected some Cat Stevens songs that I think are appropriate.
Perfect.
That I'm going to sing at Kevin's wedding. There's nothing wrong with that.
Grab the mic.
Good.
Only if it's Moonshadow.
Well, Moonshadow is one of the 6. I got 6 songs. It's going to be great.
Okay.
Kevin, did you have a question before?
Well, you mentioned, you know, the bride and groom responding. Is that expected? Because I did not plan on speaking.
Oh.
Get it together, Kevin.
I did not talk, and my husband didn't talk. We didn't want to. We got that out in front. It was best man. It was maid of honor. That's it.
Well, it's not a long speech. Just, you know, acknowledge them. Thank you guys for coming out. Because you're going to want to thank everybody who came to the wedding as well. So that could be the time where you're thanking everybody. Just make it short and to the point.
Yeah. Maybe all Jim eyes did are do that. Mm-hmm. I can't. I know I didn't speak. Because I speak for a living. They all wanted me to shut up, really.
Right.
But I think he did just say, you know, I want to thank everybody for coming. Kevin, it's real easy. Thank everybody for coming. So glad you could spend this day with us. And
all right,
cheers.
Sounds like you got it then.
I'll record it. You can just hit play.
It's easy.
And with kids coming to a wedding, I had three kids that were invited, one that just kind of came on the heels of a and guest.
Okay.
And because they were my nieces and nephew and they were in the bridal party.
Right.
But it's okay to have kids, and if you have people coming from out of town who have children,
right.
You can't expect them to get a babysitter at the hotel. They could do it,
right.
But you can't really expect them to, can
no.
you?
No, and there are some people who just don't want kids. They will say that they don't want kids at right. the wedding, but it is a family event. So if you are welcoming kids, definitely. And I've even seen couples who have hired babysitters in a nearby room
that
for
is
everybody
genius.
Who is there.
Mm-hmm. That's nice. Wendy's going to be the flower girl at Kevin's wedding. Isn't that weird? That's kind of weird, isn't it?
Don't
be honest.
Do that. I was like, you are.
Well, you're just like me. I've known him for over 20 years, and I still believe everything right, he said. I had to think for a minute. Shoot, what am I wearing?
You got to pick out an outfit. Akila, thank you for all this.
Thanks for having me,
very
guys.
Valuable
Thanks
information.
So
Akila Easter's website is called etiquettefemme.com. Great mm-hmm. information for anybody getting married.
Right.
We'll be back after this. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. It is 720 WGN. And let's set the Wayback Machine to 1967. A 21-year-old young man from Ohio finds himself in Vietnam. And there was one particular enemy offensive that he was prepared to die for. Sammy Lee Davis on the line with us, Vietnam vet, Medal of Honor recipient. How are you doing, sir?
We're doing great, ma'am. How y'all doing today?
We're doing wonderfully. You're going to be out at Anderson's Bookshop in Naperville this Sunday at 2 p.m., 123 West Jefferson in Naperville. And you're going to talk and share your incredible memoir, You Don't Lose Till You Quit Trying.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. So November 18th, 1967, your unit was hit by this massive enemy offensive. You're 21 years old. Tell us some of the trials and tribulations you met after that particular moment.
After that particular moment? Well, there was 42 of us artillerymen and 1,500 of the enemy, and they thought that all they had to do was beat their chest and run towards us, and we'd turn and run, but we didn't. We stayed firm, and we took care of each other, and we survived. We won the battle, actually.
Sammy, how in a situation like that, though, I mean, how do you not turn and run? What's in a man who says, I'm not going to turn and run. I'm going to face forward and fight this?
Well, you do for your brothers what you know they would do for you. How could I turn and run when I knew that we had brothers that were across the river that were wounded and we couldn't go off? I couldn't go off and leave them. And so I simply did for my brothers what I knew they'd do for me.
Talk about your injuries you sustained.
Well, yes, ma'am. My back was broke, fourth lumbar vertebra. My ribs on the right side were broken away, crushed. I had 30 beehive darts, which are little arrows that were in from my mid-thigh up to and including my fourth lumbar vertebra, and I was shot with an AK-47 in the right thigh, and I had burns all over my body and minor shrapnel wounds all over my body.
And even with those injuries, you by yourself manned a 2-ton howitzer, crossed a canal, and rescued three of your wounded comrades.
Yes, ma'am. You don't lose, quit trying.
Sammy, do you think about that every day? Does a day go by where you don't think about that?
Well, I won't say that every day I think about it, but certainly most days I think about it.
I am so heartbroken at the way America turned its back on Vietnam War veterans. It had to have been terrible coming home after the war and not being treated with the respect you so deserved.
Well, the average Vietnam veteran, if they chose, could go hide. And as the Medal of Honor recipient, I was the one always pushed out front, whether it being a parade or even in my hometown, I was always the one that was singled out because I was chosen to represent all the Vietnam veterans. So I was never able to hide. So I got a lot of really good handshakes and hugs, but I also got a lot of bottles thrown at me and whatever they picked up in their yard after their dog thrown at me. And, you know, I got exposed to both. I try to remember the good times.
And yet you still go on speaking on the behalf of the soldiers that fought in Vietnam for what, the past 40 years, and you continue to do this. How did you get the strength to continue with that kind of welcome home?
How do you not do that when you know that they would do it for you? So I'm still representing my brothers, just like I've did at the time, and I'm still trying to do the job. It's you know, either you leave your brother across the river or you come get him, and that's what I've chosen to do. I'm always there to go get my brother because I believe in my heart and soul that they would come get me.
Sammy, when you're in the heat of battle like that, are you thinking that this very well could be my last day on Earth, or is there no time for that?
No, sir. I believe that I was not going to see daylight, but I wasn't going to quit trying. That's the one thing I kept praying for was, sir, just help me do my job.
Yeah.
Sir, just help me do my job. And he has kept his word, and I have done my best to live up to it because I'm still here and I'm still trying to do my job.
The book is called You Don't Lose Till You Quit Trying, and as we mentioned, Vietnam vet and Medal of Honor recipient Sammy Lee Davis is going to be out at Anderson's Bookshop in Naperville this Sunday at 5 p.m., or excuse me, at 2 p.m., and yeah. It's free to go, but if you purchase the book, you're going to do some signing, and there's a very special moment in a very special movie that features your ceremony footage when you received that Congressional Medal of Honor. Tell us about that.
Yes, ma'am. Repeat that question again, ma'am. We kind of broke up a little bit.
Oh, I'm sorry. There is a special ceremony footage which was detailed in a very famous movie. Why don't you tell us a little about that?
Oh, yes, ma'am. Well, most people have seen the movie Forrest Gump. And in the movie Forrest Gump, when the president is putting the Medal of Honor around Forrest's neck, that is my actual film footage. That's me standing there. They just put Tom Hanks' face over my face. And if in the movie, if it has to do with the military, then it's based on fact, or close to the fact as practical in movie land. And it's about me. The rest of the movie, lightly, and I do express lightly, touches my life.
Do you like chocolate?
The only similarities between Jenny and my wife Dixie is that I love Dixie as much as Forrest loved Jenny.
Oh, nice. Oh,
and you like chocolate, I assume.
Oh, yes, ma'am. In fact, I'm sitting here nibbling on chocolate now.
Well, you sound like such a wonderful man. Now, how did your footage end up in Forrest Gump?
They chose it.
Just that. And did they notify you to let you know that as you were receiving the Congressional Medal of Honor, that did they need your permission? Or did you just go to the movie theater and watch the movie and go, hey, wait a minute?
I am public domain. As a Medal of Honor recipient, I am public domain. I got a call from the Pentagon, and the gentleman that called, we were friends, and he said, Sam, there's a movie production company here that wants any and all film footage that we have concerning you. And I said, really? Well, what are they going to do? And they said, well, it's a movie production company, so we're guessing that they're going to make a movie. And I said, well, what's the name of the movie? And at that point, they did not know. And over the next 2 to 3 months, as they would find out more information, they would call and let me know what was happening. And that's when they told me that the movie was going to be based on the book Forrest Gump.
So, that's amazing.
That's something, isn't it? And remind me, Sammy, that day, that was President Lyndon Johnson who put the medal on you, correct?
That is correct, yes, sir.
So at some point, are you pinching yourself saying, here I am, you know, a guy from Dayton, Ohio, and I'm standing next to the President of the United States as he puts the Medal of Honor on me. Is that a surrealistic moment?
Well, after the ceremony, my mama told me, she said, son, your legs were shaking so hard, I thought you was going to fall down. I said, mama, I'm going to fall down too. I've been trained very well on how to do my job.
Yeah.
But part of that training had never been on how to go to the White House and stand in front of the president and receive the Medal of Honor. So I was truly frightened.
Sure.
When it comes to speaking to veterans, I don't know what the proper protocol is. Is it okay to say thank you for your service? Is that something you like hearing?
Well, yes, ma'am. Of course, courtesy is always nice to hear.
And how are you doing today? How's Sammy Lee Davis today?
Still hanging in there, still trying to do his job. We are going back to Vietnam June the 12th. We're going back to the fire base Cudgel where I earned the medal. One of the three men that I swam across the river for, him and his wife, is going with us. My wife has gone with me, and we're going to go back and stand on that riverbank, and it's going to be exciting, but emotional.
Sure, bittersweet, I would imagine, huh? Have you, Sammy, been back since then, since your initial time there?
No, sir, have not. For many years, we've been saying, well, you know, next year we ought to go back to Vietnam. Well, next year we ought to go back to Vietnam, and at almost 70 years old, we decided we better go back this year. So that's why we're going back.
Sure.
What a great moment, and you're right, it is going to be bittersweet and very emotional, but you can also stand there and know that you survived.
Yes, ma'am. This time we'll have our wives with us.
Sammy, I don't know how you can live through some of the things you lived through over there and not be a changed man. How do you see yourself now as opposed to prior to your service over there?
Well, it made me even more determined to stand up firmly for what I believe is true and correct in my heart. And that's what I encourage everyone that I speak to, is that they need to stand up firmly for what they believe is right in their heart. And if all of Americans, if we the people do that, we can make this country be worthy of our forefathers' efforts.
I cannot wait to read your memoir, You Don't Lose Till You Quit Trying. You're such a remarkable man and quite a hero. We thank you so much for your service. And anyone who would like to meet Sammy Lee Davis, Anderson's Bookshop in Naperville, this Sunday the 5th at 2 p.m. It's 123 West Jefferson Avenue. And I'll tell you what, I'm going to try and watch Forrest Gump in the next couple of weeks, and I will salute you as I see that footage.
Yeah, and we'll be at the June the 7th, we'll be at the VFW Post 9545 in New Lenox, Illinois.
Oh, very nice. I'll say that last part again, Sammy. I'm sorry, I cut you off.
The VFW Post 9545, June the 7th. We'll be there 5:30 to 8, meeting and greeting everybody. A lot of my brother veterans are going to be there with me.
And what town is that in on June 7th? In New Lenox.
New Lenox, VFW Post 9545. It's at 323 Old Hickory Road in New Lenox.
All right. Well, we didn't know about that. And listen, have a safe trip to Vietnam and really take it in. And I'm so glad you'll be able to share it with your wife. That's really a beautiful story, a really kind of a happy ending to an otherwise tragic event.
It's going to make it even better to have our wives there with us.
Sure, of course. Sammy, thank you so much. It's an honor to talk to you, sir.
Well, thank you, sir.
Absolutely. It's Sammy Lee Davis. Again, the book is called You Don't Lose Till You Quit Trying.
What an amazing story.
Yeah,
and I think we should start calling each other sir and ma'am from now on.
From now on.
We were so polite with Sammy Lee Davis, and I think we need to bring it back to that.
All right, you got it.
So shall we take a break, sir?
Yes, ma'am. For some reason, I thought Sammy Lee Davis was from the South. I think the name indicated it a little bit to me, and just his manner of speaking indicated it to me, and I'm reading up on him. He was born in Dayton, Ohio, and then raised in a town in California. But were you getting some sort of a Southern vibe from him?
And yes, I don't sir, know I was.
That's part of it.
You also have something to read, sir.
I do.
Where's the ma'am?
I wasn't forgetting. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Where's my ruler?
Nobody wants that. Suddenly I'm in Catholic school again.
Yes, you are. But I'm not a nun, I'll tell you that much.
No, weekday mornings, 4 to 10, it has everything you need to know and some things you just need to see. What is it? It's WGN-TV Morning News. They are Chicago's must-watch morning news.
Here's my thought on the whole Southern thing. It sounds a lot of military people. Is that because they train in the South and Atlanta? I don't know where the big bases are.
I've always wondered that. You could train for the military in several different parts of the country, but for some reason, people that are in the military and pilots tend to go with kind of a Southern-y sounding accent. I'm not positive why.
I don't know about the accent, but like just the ma'am and sir thing, it seems to be just like the military training, I think.
Yeah, that's also Southern, though, too.
Yeah, but why? But like I know you could go to an Air Force base or you know, you could train for it almost anywhere. I know there are some in the South, but why do they, for some reason, many of them take on kind of a Southern way about them, like our last guest did, and he's not from the South.
It's fun to talk that way. I'm going to start talking like that right now.
All right. That's fun.
My mother-in-law was born in Corinth, Mississippi.
Yes.
She has been here. She's not that old, but she has been here.
Oh, careful.
Oh, I know.
Careful.
Well, Jim's 46. She's been here over 46 years.
Right.
And I think it's getting thicker because it's just fun to talk like that.
Sure it is.
Wow.
Sure it is. By the way, I'm still disturbed at what you disclosed earlier, that she oftentimes, when Jim was younger, would walk around with him on a leash.
There are pictures that I saw.
I may not be able to shake that for a long time.
It's not really a leash. It was a harness. It's not. It wasn't around his neck.
That's way better. I didn't know.
It was a little harness. They were very popular, and she was a travel agent and a flight attendant for a very long time, so they traveled every year.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm sure he was an unruly child, and he's the oldest. Then he had a brother and a sister, and to keep track of those kids,
you put him on a leash.
I worked at Brookfield Zoo. I really saw people, little kids, on those harnesses all the time.
I would see it when I worked at Lincoln Mall. People would come in, especially at Christmas time, and you know the mall was crowded, and they'd put their kid on. It wasn't a harness. It was a leash. It was like a dog leash.
Yeah, but
leash.
It's not around their neck.
No.
It's a harness like, you know, that you'd wear a backpack with.
Right.
And then there's a little clip on the back. Now, I should have gotten it. Now my mom didn't put me on a leash, but we lived across from a park, and I kept leaving without her permission to go play on the swings and the spiral slide.
Right.
So she tied me to our sandbox in the backyard.
Oh, no.
The neighbor kids behind us had like 7 kids, and what's Wendy doing? Oh, her mom tied her to the sandbox. Well, she can't play in it. I know, she's standing up.
I want to say there's no lasting effects, but I've been near your husband when he approaches a fire hydrant, and it's always awkward.
Keep walking.
Right.
Keep walking.
Don't stop. Don't stop.
You can do
not stop. We're almost past it. All right.
Although he, again, as this was brought up last night, he said, I am telling you, maybe it's I who had my mom on a leash.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe.
He's turned it around. See, he's always turned that frown upside down.
Every time.
Me, I'm like, I was tied to a sandbox.
All right. A quick break. Steve with the news and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Great job there, Steve Bertrand. News is breaking all the time, and hearing about that Thunderbird and how the pilot was able to eject himself.
That's a miracle.
I know.
Right there, that is a miracle.
Well, they're saying this is the local TV station, that there had been a flyover at the commencement ceremony, Colorado Springs, I believe, and that they think maybe engine failure, but that the pilot was able to eject, which is great.
That is awesome.
Yeah, yep. All right, so there's that story, Steve, and then the other one is the story that you led off with, and that is that Paul Ryan is now endorsing Donald Trump.
Yeah,
and I said to Wendy, I'm horribly disappointed in Paul Ryan.
But you expected this.
I did expect it. This is not a surprise. You knew this was coming. But what I said is, and I mean this, it just shows that politicians are shills, that the party says to them, we need some sort of unity. Even though you don't see eye to eye with this guy, you still need to endorse him. It's important to our cause that he has your name behind him. And that's very upsetting to me. I would just, if I'm obviously not a politician, but if I were a politician,
you'd be a bad one.
I'd be an awful politician. Well, I'd be the worst politician.
You know, you can take whatever the party is out of it. It's self-interest. I mean, it's no surprise that Paul Ryan eventually came around to this. He's one of the leaders of the Republican Party.
Sure,
he's the chair of the convention.
And
the convention is going to endorse this guy.
He was alluding to it by saying, you know, we've talked, we're going to talk a little more. I mean, he was definitely going to endorse him.
I'm a little surprised it came this quickly. But look, it was inevitable. I mean, you know, you might not love everyone on this radio station, Bill, but they're part of your team.
Right.
Right.
No, he does not feel they're part of
his Wendy,
team.
They're part of your team.
I know they're part of my team.
And, you know, you're going to support them. And
I certainly do.
And so that's kind of what this is. And, you know, Paul Ryan might want to be president in 4 years. You might argue that he would be better off if Trump were to run and lose, and then there'd be a fresh Republican in 4 years.
Of course.
But, you know, it would look bad for him to go to Republican voters a couple years from now if he abandoned the Republican nominee in 2016. So it was going to come. It's interesting the way it came. You know, an op-ed piece in the Janesville, Wisconsin newspaper.
Yeah.
You know, he did not do it with fanfare.
Right.
He did not do it standing alongside Donald Trump.
Which is telling, isn't it?
Yeah, he sort of dropped a note and then ran, lit the firecracker and, you know, ran away. He certainly will have to talk about it soon. But this sort of puts the rest of the idea of anyone holding out against Donald Trump. I mean, I think there are going to be plenty of Republican lawmakers who might not be enthusiastic and might not campaign for him. But as far as a vocal, visible opposition within the party, the cadre of elected officials, I don't think you'll see it.
But don't you have, wouldn't you have more respect for a politician, any politician, take Paul Ryan out of the equation for a little bit, anybody who just says, look, I'm a member of this party, and I got to be honest with you, I don't think this guy is in anyone's best interest. I said that from day one. I'm going to say this all the way through. If you want to vote for him, vote for him, but he does not have my endorsement. Wouldn't you respect the guy who would just be honest and say that?
I would, but the party
yeah,
wouldn't.
Right. I would, Bill. I understand what you're saying. I mean, I'm trying to think, you know, what if Bernie Sanders does that now with Hillary Clinton?
Right.
You know, right. I don't think she's qualified to be president. I don't think, you know, that it just doesn't serve
well. But
with
Bernie Sanders, and I guess to some extent with Paul Ryan, because what he's trading off is his future for this endorsement. But with Bernie Sanders, at some point, there's going to be some meeting somewhere where they say, Bernie, it means a lot to us to have you on our side. And here's what your future looks like. And then they promise him something, right? They give him some sort of a position. Don't
yeah.
you see that as a possibility?
Yeah, but I don't know what that's going to be. Yeah, there is a difference, you know. I mean, the Donald Trump, whether or not you support him, question is altogether different from policy in many ways.
Sure.
I mean, because a lot of this doesn't have to do with policy. It has to do with temperament. It has to do with trustworthiness. It has to do with character. You know, so it's an unusual situation with Donald Trump.
I know it is.
We need a third party. I think Mitt Romney should grab Paul Ryan and they should start the party party.
The party party.
And we can just completely shake things up.
The party store party.
That party's already formed, actually.
Has it?
Andrew W.K., who you guys had on.
Pat Paulson tried to do that.
Every 4 years, Pat Paulson tried to do it.
You've got the Libertarian ticket, which is probably the most qualified third or fourth party ticket, you know, in my lifetime.
But name who's their candidate.
Gary Johnson was a two-term governor of New Mexico, and William Weld was a two-term governor of Massachusetts, both
Because you work in the newsroom, the average person is not going to whip out those names like that.
Well, no, maybe not. But look, they're two guys who served 8 years as governors of states. That's, you know, that's not Lyndon LaRouche stuff. That's real stuff. And William Weld
True.
Was, of, as I recall, fiscal conservative, more socially moderate. You know, they both are as qualified to be president as many other people who've run and won.
We need the party party. Come on, it's fun to say. Join the party party.
I just get
Bud Light could sponsor it.
Oh, they would. They would. I just get
America.
So,
that would be America.
Right.
I'm so disillusioned with the process where people play by the party's best interest and they go against their own belief. Paul Ryan is going against his own beliefs. You know he's no fan of Donald Trump's.
Okay, but I mean, first of all, almost no big political leader is going to be perfectly aligned with another, right?
Right.
So, you know, you've got Democrats who are going to line up behind Hillary Clinton, and a lot of them probably aren't going to like her email scandal or
sure.
they're not going to like, you know, this or that, but they're going to support her because she's on their team. They don't like everything about her, but they like enough about her to want her or a fellow Democrat to be elected. You know?
Right.
I mean, Paul Ryan, the choice is Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton for Paul Ryan. And he sees himself more closely aligned with Trump.
Think about that, though. If Paul Ryan had said today, instead of giving this interview where he endorses Donald Trump, if he said, you know, I thought about it, I weighed the two options, and I think Hillary's the better choice of the two, wouldn't that have been something?
Yeah. And then they would have warmed up the tar and pulled
right.
the feathers off the birds and
for a long
gotten
time.
Ready to get going.
Are you done playing What If?
It's just,
I know.
You know what I mean? It crushes me. It's the reason I don't believe any politician, because a guy can say for weeks or months or years, I don't like what this guy represents. This guy's bad for the country. And then at some point he goes, uh-oh, my job's on the line. I can't have that. I might want to run for president in 4 years. I better do what the party says. It's so
it's
disillusioning.
Disgusting.
You know what strikes me is Jerry Brown just endorsed Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
And part of it, they're making a huge deal because Jerry Brown ran against Bill Clinton in 1992.
Right.
And Jerry Brown brought up Hillary in that campaign. And I don't know if
negatively.
Hugely negatively.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember, but there was a Democratic debate and Bill Clinton went off on Jerry Brown and said, you are not qualified to stand on a stage with my wife.
Wow.
And it happened right over here at McClure Court.
Wow.
They were debating in Chicago. So now Jerry Brown, 26 years later, 24 years later, comes out and endorses Hillary Clinton. They're making a big deal of it, like it's a flip-flop. Mm. And you've got all of these guys who were looking at Donald Trump's hand 6 weeks ago, you know, now begging to run with him. I mean, what's that?
So what are the odds now of Trump choosing Paul Ryan to be his running mate?
No, never.
No?
No. I mean, I don't think Ryan, I think Ryan, look, he does have some principles.
He does?
But even that is a move for 4 years in the future, right? Even that is him saying, okay, you want to be the president? Do your best. See what you can do. But when you don't do well, I'm still in the clear. I may have endorsed you, but I wasn't on the ticket.
If Donald Trump, you know, and he's, if the tide turns against him, and it might, or it might not.
It's
I mean, it hasn't yet. I don't know. If the tide turns against him, I think there's going to be such a negative aura around him in the years to come that it will be, it will have been poison to run with him.
Right.
I mean, but he still endorsed him. So isn't that poisonous?
No, no. And that's a big if. The tide might not turn against him, you guys, but if it does, I think it's going to go big time. And I think anything he would have touched, it's going to be sort of radioactive for a while.
Sure.
That's why I wouldn't run with him.
Get her again.
I don't think it could ever be. I know her name keeps coming up, but I can't imagine.
God. No, he wouldn't do that.
He wants to win.
Right. She's the one who keeps bringing it up.
It is, isn't it?
Yes.
It is.
I can't stand this political stuff, so I would just like to go to Instagram and look at Kim Kardashian's naked butt.
All right.
I'll show it to you during the break.
Put it on a screensaver. Please.
It outweighs the screen. It's bigger than the screen.
How about that? All right, a break and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Wendy, we have received a multitude of texts at 312-981-7200, and they all say essentially this. Yeah, 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 but do you know what our president's favorite television shows have been over the past several decades?
I'm dying to know.
I do know that. There was an article over at MeTV.com which named our last several presidents, 10 or 12 presidents, and the TV shows that they could not miss. Now, keep in mind, these were in the days before your DVRs or your video recorders, so these presidents had to stay home and watch these shows because they were their favorites. Let's start out with David Eisenhower, or Ike, as I always called him, Wendy. What was his favorite television show? Dwight D. Eisenhower.
Little Rascals.
Nope. The Phil Silver Show.
Oh, he had good taste and a good sense of humor.
Don't you think?
Yeah.
Yep, and it had a military theme
in
keeping with his life. Yeah, he loved The Phil Silver Show. John F. Kennedy had two favorites, and they're extremely different. What would John F. Kennedy's favorite television shows have been? I'll give you a clue on one. One was a Western.
Bonanza.
Not Bonanza, no.
Seven Brides for Seven Brothers.
No, that was a book and a movie. It was not a TV show.
High Chaparral.
It was not High... Oh, that's a great... You went deep on that one. It was not High Chaparral. John F. Kennedy's favorite Western was Maverick.
Oh...
With James Garner,
yeah.
sometimes Roger Moore, sometimes Jack Barry, depending on what years you were watching it. And he also liked the comedy The Jack Benny Show a great deal.
Again, great sense of
humor. Yeah, he had a very good sense of humor. Lyndon B. Johnson, Lyndon Baines Johnson, enjoyed watching the news because he was on it. And Westerns, because I think he was in some Westerns, wasn't he? He was in High Chaparral for the first few seasons. People don't remember, but he was.
You seem proud of me that I said High Chaparral.
I love that you said High Chaparral. That was fun. Richard Milhouse Nixon had two favorite television shows. One I can see, I guess I can see both.
It Takes a Thief?
No. That was better than High Chaparral.
Thank you.
One was a TV detective show. Richard Nixon loved a TV detective show. What would it have been? Can I give you a little scene from the show?
Magnum P.I.
It was not Magnum P.I. That would have been later.
Yeah, I know.
Who loves you, baby?
Kojak?
Kojak. Richard Nixon loved Kojak.
Who didn't? I loved that show.
Hard not to love Theo Kojak. Very hard not to love it. And then the other one was a comedy, or supposed to be a comedy. It had a laugh track. I don't know how funny it was.
I don't know.
Gilligan's Island.
Really?
Picture for a moment... The head of the free world, Richard Nixon, enjoying Gilligan's Island.
I am not a crook. I'm the professor.
Right.
Those two lovely ladies. And lovey.
This is the weirdest one. Gerald Ford's favorite show. Now, this is an obscure show. This is just weird that the president would like the show. It's weird that the president would even know that this show existed, much less call it his favorite show. No. Although, I don't know if you remember, Richard Nixon was a guest on Laugh.
I do remember that. Sock it to me.
Right. But Gerald Ford was a big fan of the show Moving On with Claude Aikens. That was about a CB radio guy.
Oh, yeah.
Moving on. He had a
I
truck.
Never watched it. Yeah.
I think Frank Converse was on that show, too, I think. Pretty
oh,
sure.
You're just tooting your horn.
I think.
Or your CB.
My truck horn from my Peterbilt. What about Jimmy Carter? What was his favorite television show? Jimmy Carter's favorite show. I'm going to warn you, this is a trick
Peanuts?
Question.
Come on.
That's good.
I want credits.
Wow.
Thank you.
You did. You're fantastic.
Look
on
out,
that.
SNL. This is going to be on Weekend
Wendy,
Update.
That's fantastic.
Thank you.
This is a trick question because Jimmy Carter was not a fan of television. He didn't watch much TV at all. He did not have a favorite TV show. Even when Gerald Ford would say, "Come to my house and watch Moving On," Jimmy Carter would say, "I can't. We've got to round up Billy." That would have been the show he would have watched. Ronald Reagan. Enjoyed a comedy a great deal. Boy, this is interesting, too. I would not have put this show with Ronald Reagan. What do you think his favorite television show was?
I Love Lucy.
Nope. It was a modern day, like I Love Lucy, to, you know, that was in the 50s and then into the 60s. This
Apple's
was a
Way?
Current show. No, wow. Impressive, but no.
God, you know.
That's great that you're mentioning these.
It's so funny because, you know, you wow. could have sex lines where people talk dirty to you.
Right.
I just say old TV
That's
shows.
All I need. That's all I need. My engine is revved.
Is that a sex worker?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. Ronald Reagan's favorite TV show, Wendy, Family Ties. Ronald Reagan loved Family Ties.
Okay. Really?
Yeah. Well, because Alex Keaton was a
yeah,
young Republican.
Yeah. Why do you think he liked it?
Yeah.
He idolized Ronald Reagan.
It was reciprocal. That's what it was.
Oh, I know. But if yeah. somebody idolized Bill Leff, wouldn't you like that
I'd
show?
I'd watch that show. Unless Kevin Hart was in it. Then I wouldn't watch it. I would not watch that show. George H.W. Bush, or as we like to call him, Original Recipe Bush, what was his favorite television show?
Oh,
it's a mystery.
God.
Not that he had a favorite
Murder,
TV show.
Murder, She Wrote.
Murder, She Wrote.
See, I would have had fun.
Murder, She
him.
Wrote.
Oh, wait, this is Original?
Yeah, Original Recipe Bush. George H.W. Bush.
He thought Angela Lansbury was hot.
Yes. Yes.
That's why he watched it.
Yes. Bill Clinton, two favorite television shows. Now, one of... Now, these are weird because these could not have been on when he was president, I don't think.
What, The Real Housewives?
No. No, that makes sense, too. That makes great sense. Grey's Anatomy was not on when he was president, was it? That came after
it
he was president.
It had to have been.
Grey's Anatomy? I don't think
He's
so.
He's a big Clooney fan.
No, that wasn't on. That must have been later. Evidently, he was too busy to watch TV. I don't know what he was doing at that point. Grey's Anatomy, and the other one's Blind Spot, which I think is on now.
I don't even know what that
Blind
is.
Blind Spot is on now. George W. Bush. Now, this would be so easy to make fun, to make jokes, and we may. But what would George W. Bush's favorite television show have been? Blue's Clues? Only during the Steve years.
Yeah, oh, that's the only time it
matters. Got awful after
I'm sorry.
Steve left Blue's Clues. Biography. I would not have guessed that.
I think he's lying because it made him look smarter.
Right. I would not have guessed Biography. Barack Obama, our current president, his favorite television show. And this is an older show. He's watching it in reruns, but he loves it. I know he loves
Seinfeld.
It.
Seinfeld.
MASH.
Oh, who doesn't?
Everybody enjoys MASH.
Kevin, that's what you and the president have in common. You like MASH as well?
I mean, I like it. I just guessed randomly and yep. got it.
Well, you were right.
Well, I was.
Nicely done. Nicely
Excellent.
Done.
The wedding can continue.
Yep. All right. Well, here's what we'll do. Take a quick break, and then Roe and Ann will be in. Tell us what they have. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.